Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, all I have to say was last night was unbelievable. And so for David Jones, who's going to join us in the 7 o'clock hour Central Time in the next hour. For you in the Eastern Time Zone, it's 7 o'clock Central Time Zone where I am at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock for you Mountain Time folks who haven't woken up yet. And, in flyover country. And of course, the left coast, listen anywhere except the conservatives from somewhere else, you're still 4 o'clock in the morning. But yesterday was just this incredible experience, and it probably could have been publicized better. A lot of people didn't know about it and heard about it afterwards. But the guests that were there were fabulous. And Dr. Deborah Viglione organized this and put this all together. She's a doctor here, and I believe Gulf Breeze or somewhere nearby the Milton area. So we got Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze. It's kind of we've got this beautiful beach here. It's the best beaches in the world. I mean, it's just unbelievable here. And so she put this together, and she had Dr. Peter McCullough, who's one of my personal favorites. He was on the big screen, and he wasn't recorded. He was live, but they had a little trouble, him hearing a lot of stuff. So he kind of sat there for a while. But when he spoke, it was incredible. Let me get the list here. It's probably the best way to do this. I'm terrible on names. If I meet you and I see you 2 weeks later, I'll probably have forgotten your name. It just kind of works out that way. So let me see if I can – I put a bunch of posts on today too. So we got a lot going on today. We've got elections. We've got Angel Law is going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour talking about, government-filed racketeering and trafficking and all kinds of things like that. We've got David Jones in the 7 o'clock hour from Santa Rosa Volunteers. And, of course, we have Gene Vernig right now, our producer. And so let me get this list here. So here are the folks who spoke last night. Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Ryan Cole, who I did get to meet, Dr. Ben Marble, Dr. Brian Artis, Jana Benham, Jeff Childers, who's a lawyer who I also did meet, and David Trombley and Rick Wilhote. And so it was an incredible list. And these folks are just amazing. And this is the new, Army of Freedom. This is like the medical freedom army, because they're the ones that have been saying all along what we've been saying. Actually, I think we beat them to it, that remdesivir kills people. The standard treatment in the hospital, remdesivir from Gilead, medical, they've got the patent on it. They're the ones pushing it. And it has, 30% kidney failure and like a 25%+ mortality rate. It had 50% mortality rate in trials. And yet this is the one that Dr. Fascist pushes, the genocidal psychopathic drug pusher of the NIAID. And he's not even a virologist. That's the other staggering thing. So we had him, Peter McCullough, on, like I say, Dr. Ryan Cole, he's a pathologist. And they were talking about the vaccines, the absurdity of this, the mandates. We had ministers praying. We had a former F-18 pilot who had cancer. Now he's doing fine. It was just an incredible turnout. And so needless to say, my job there was to talk about Action Radio. And Jeff Childers was one of the more interesting and relevant because he's the lawyer there. And so I'll be talking to him hopefully fairly soon. In fact, what's your name here? Dr. Viglione. I'm going to put this up here so I can see it. I got stuff everywhere here. This is why I like radio, so I can make a mess on my desk and you don't know. It's great. Anyway, so I'm going to be talking to Dr. Viglione as well, and I'll be in touch with these other people. But as Jeff Childers, when I talked to him, he had probably the most encouraging thing to say. He says, I'm a lawyer. I do trials. I litigate. He's the one that he's in Gainesville, and he's the one that got the mask mandate in Gainesville overturned. So this guy knows his stuff. He's already there. He says, I said, I need the tools. I need the tools to do my job. I said, like anybody, I need tools. And he says, those are laws. And I said, well, it's funny you should say that. that's what we do. I said, we're a citizen legislature. We write those laws. And so we're going to write good laws. We have work to do. So Gene, just to bring you into the conversation here, the people that I met last night, we've just taken a quantum leap. And I have, it never was more clear to me the need for Action Radio, for a citizen legislature, for helping, attorney Jeff Childers and Dr. Deborah Viglione, give them the legislative tools they need to be able to do their job. Because the activists in this country, there's like this huge thing missing, this massive void that I see us filling. And that void is citizen legislation because the laws aren't good enough. These people are forced to work with inferior, substandard, and especially special interest laws. The laws of the Food and Drug Administration are not to help you. The laws of the Food and Drug Administration are to help their benefactors, Big Pharma. That's who pays for the laws that come out of the Food and Drug Administration with their drug trials and subsidies and everything else. I mean, Big Pharma pays the budget. I think it's over half the budget of the FDA in drug trials. Well, that's a conflict of interest, all right? So you can't expect them to come out with good law. And if you don't have a good law, then good lawyers, you know, have nowhere to go. So I see it as our job to give good lawyers the good laws that they can use to make so to force the judges, you know, kicking and screaming to make good decisions and good rulings and issue good opinions. And we're an essential part of that, and that's the part that's missing. People, they want something to do. They want to get out there. They want to be active. I mean, I saw a stadium full of people. Not one was wearing a mask. It was great. You know, in fact, I forget, one of the speakers pointed out, yeah, this is nobody's wearing a mask out there, and you're all sitting together. How about that? Why? Because we know better. Okay. And so, you know, we'll see if the news tries to you know, call this a super spreader event. But, you know, I would say almost nobody in that crowd had a vaccine. None. Because it just, you know, and most of the people either were veterans or had family members who were veterans. It was an incredible crowd. We're in exactly the right area here to do what we're doing as far as Action Radio goes. Gene, I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at pictures or anything. I'm going to try and post a video as soon as I find it with some of the speakers. But, you know, if that doesn't encourage, you know, you and everybody else that there's hope and also that we have a mission. We have work to do. I mean, we legitimately have a role to fill. You know, from what was just an idea of mine, you know, back in 2014, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a citizen legislature attached to a radio show? To now, the fact is we're filling a critical void. And curious how you see it, but that's how I see it. I see it that this is, we need to give these people the tools so they can do their job. Gene, good morning.
Hi. Yeah, it sounds like you had a great evening.
Yeah, we did.
So awesome.
Yeah. All right. We've got a lot of things going on today. We've got, like I say, David Jones is going to join us in the 7 o'clock hour and Angel Law. We're going to shift things around a little bit here because I kind of goofed with scheduling. So she's been, you know, scheduled previously, but we just had other things that were the big priorities. And now it seems like we've got time to do this. We're going to take a little break. But so I've got tons of stories we haven't done our election update. And we haven't done our Not Ready for Facebook vaccine report. Gene, do you have any stories you want to talk about? Anything in particular in your mind that we haven't covered? You know, things over the last few days. Otherwise, I shall launch into some of the things that we've got going on here.
You can launch into it.
Okay, well, sounds good. All right, so first thing, and this is, you know, a lot of people have pointed the story out to me. I have a lot of great researchers, and people say, Greg, cover this. I'm like, it's already been covered. You know, so I'm not talking about it, but I always like to talk about things in terms of what we can do about them. And so here we go. The tide is turning. The tide is definitely changing from, you know, what it was to what it's becoming. We have something interesting too. We're going to be testing our Skype line today. So at some point we're going to have someone, you know, do an invite, and it's a future guest. So if they Skype in, then we'll know it's working. That would be a wonderful thing. Anyway, so let me go back to my article. Where'd it go? I was here a second ago. Let's move this here. One of my big fears of doing this is one day I get the wrong one and just cut the show off midway through. I don't want to do that, but, you know, you never know. Stranger things have happened. So here's what's going on in the legal world. So let me get to this story here, and then we've got some election news and more vaccine stuff. Judge temporarily stops New York's vaccine mandate for healthcare workers, citing U.S. Constitution. That in itself is a revelation. The idea that a judge is actually using the Constitution, you know, that's kind of a cool thing, especially from New York. It's not something you see all the time. So this story was pointed out to me, and this comes from Tom Peppert, and he's a National File, which is one of my go-to sources here. This is Judge David Hurd of Utica. Now, I've heard this guy before. He's done more good rulings. He actually is a, you know, what I would consider a good constitutional judge. And so for those of you that watch the liberals' judge shop, all the communists in our judicial system, all the ones that kind of make stuff up. You know, if you ever read Franz Kafka's The Trial, those are the kind of judges that these cases usually go to. This guy's pretty decent. Anyway, he says Judge David Hurd of Utica, New York, sided with 17 healthcare workers who sued over the New York State vaccine mandate for healthcare workers that may have seen up to 75,000 unemployed for refusing one of the controversial vaccines. He says Hurd granted an injunction against the mandate starting immediately while the case is tried. He He wrote, there is no adequate explanation from defendants, meaning the state, about why the reasonable accommodation that must be extended to a medically exempt healthcare worker under, you know, 2.61, I'm not sure what that is, could not similarly be extended to a healthcare worker with a sincere religious objection. So the way these things usually go, and it's very unfortunate. If you notice the left, they always get the injunction first, and then you have to take the case all the way through trial, all the way for everything else. And eventually, you know, when the conservatives win, when the patriots win, then whatever the law or policy is gets overturned. But they do. But so then, in other words, they have the injunction first and then the trial later. And so conservatives, unfortunately, seem to be doing a lot of judges. They'll do it the reverse. They'll let the policy stand until it's overturned. And, of course, the Democrats will insist on that so they can get more of it in, more people into the country, more DACA, more whatever it is. They want, whatever it is they want to do, they want to do as much of it as they can while it's still an open process. So this guy has cut it off now. And so he says very simply that, you know, that vaccine mandate ain't going to go anywhere. And so this I find quite fascinating. Just more on the story. Local media reported that unlike other judges who have heard similar cases about vaccine mandates, Judge Heard broke with the norm. Isn't that great? By prioritizing the U.S. Constitution. I think that's the saddest thing I've heard for a while. Judge Heard broke with the norm by prioritizing the U.S. Constitution. That shouldn't be news. That shouldn't be something that happens. That shouldn't be, you know, that is not what I would expect. Anyway, he says the public interest lies with enforcing the guarantees enshrined in the Constitution and federal anti-discrimination laws. And so we've got, you know, as much as I mentioned a few minutes ago that we need to write some new laws, and we do. We need to get rid of some old ones. We need to write some new ones. We need to amend some current ones. There's a lot of good laws already out there that aren't being used. And so, especially in the Constitution. The Constitution, as Pianki, one of our regular callers, says frequently, the Constitution does not have an on and off switch. You know, it doesn't matter what the emergency, it doesn't matter what the crisis, doesn't matter what the war, doesn't matter what the plague, doesn't matter what the, you know, pandemic, the Constitution is always in force. You know, no part of the Constitution says that it shall be suspended under times of whatever. Most other constitutions have that. They have an emergency clause. Well, of course, rights can be suspended during an emergency. So the beauty of the United States is rights cannot be suspended. Doesn't matter what. That's the end of the statement. Rights cannot be suspended. But somehow this bogus legal thing came up, and Jeff Childers talked a little bit about this yesterday. He talks about if there's a compelling state interest, you know, your rights can be limited or restricted. That, of course, is BS. Nothing in the Constitution talks about a compelling state interest. Nothing in the Constitution says rights can be touched. You know, that's the whole point. I mean, the Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not. That's a mandate. Shall not be infringed. In other words, can't be touched, even encroached upon. Right? It doesn't say shall not be infringed, you know, unless there's a compelling state interest. It doesn't say that. It says shall not be infringed. Period. That's it. End of conversation. And so no provision of the Constitution allows for this compelling state interest. And then the court, after they said, well, we can limit. See, courts just make things up. This is why the Supreme Court, you know, is judicial tyranny, because they just make stuff up. And so they made stuff up, and they will say, well, if we have a compelling state interest, in other words, if it's for the public good, if it's for the greater good, you know, if it's necessary for public safety, if there's a pandemic, you know, that's affecting, you know, millions and millions of people, then there might be a compelling state interest in limiting rights. Well, how the hell are rights affected by a pandemic? You know, I mean, this is insanity, this bizarre thing, because you look at what they did, lockdowns, mandates, and closures. Not one of those things did anything but make the pandemic worse. Okay, so if these people are going to come to us with the excuse that, well, we have to limit rights for the pandemic, for the public good, we're trying to save grandma here, you know, no, they're not. They're gaining power and they're doing things that don't work. Lockdowns put people in their homes. Well, homes are the greatest transmission point for COVID. Lockdowns cause depression, anxiety, financial loss, business loss, loss of lifetime savings, more depression, more anxiety, which leads to addiction, suicide, and everything else. So, and it had nothing to do with the pandemic. It had nothing to do with the COVID virus. And the government's killing all these people through all these different things they're doing. And that's the public good? Is that what they consider? You know, and so the idea that, you know, and then they say, well, you know, we have different tests of scrutiny, you know. So in other words, if we're going to limit your rights, we have to do it in the least invasive way possible. Well, that's not a rule either. There is no invasion of rights. So whether you invade rights a little bit or a lot, it doesn't matter. You can't even do it, you know, an infinitesimally small amount. You can't do it at all. So it doesn't matter what the test is, strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, you know, no scrutiny at all, whatever the categories are, right? You can't do it. And so this is why this is so fascinating. So this one judge, and like I said, I don't even know if the author, Tom Papert, I think he's the editor. I don't even know if he realizes what he said. Broke with the norm by prioritizing the U.S. Constitution. Scary stuff. All right, the article continues. He says, Kathy Hochul, who recently became governor. Oh, I got to get Jean's opinion on that when she comes back. Jean's working on stuff. But it's fascinating, this Kathy Hochul, who's actually worse than Andrew Cuomo, you know, and who gets up and basically – I think she thinks she's, you know, God's right-hand person because she gets up and says, well, you know, and she talks about all this stuff. You know, she said, the article says, became governor recently after predecessor was ousted over claims of sexually inappropriate behavior. He should have been ousted over mass murder in the nursing homes. That's what he did. But they got a, but, you know, apparently in Democrat world, you know, inappropriate behavior is much worse than mass murder, which is kind of fascinating in itself. Anyway, she stood by her mandate in a statement. I stand behind this mandate, and I will fight this decision in court. Really? Yeah, unconstitutional it is. Jean, what do you think? Let's get you back in here.
Well, it's interesting because before Cuomo was ousted, I have a good friend that lives in New York. She's one of my best friends. And she said that about this going to be governor, which is a now governor, she said, oh, God, she's even worse than Cuomo. And it's true. It's very true. And the audacity that, oh, everybody needs to be vaccinated. And the thing is, one, it is a personal choice. Number two, it's like, and you can't, okay, if the vaccine really did what it was supposed to and everybody had to get it, fine, whatever. But the bottom line is personal choice. And then number two, when it's not... when it doesn't do what it says it's, I believe it doesn't do what it says it's going to do, because otherwise if it did, people that were vaccinated should not be so worried about people that aren't, because they would not get COVID anyway. But the thing is with that, you say, okay, the hospitals all need to get vaccinated, every employee. You know, the bottom line is this, what is that going to do to the workforce for those people that don't? I'm sorry, but even if I'm not vaccinated, but as people know, but even if I was, it's like, and I would be going to work every day. You're going to be going to work short staffed. And while you could be getting what some places are paying, I don't know, $10 more an hour, some people are giving a $1,500 bonus for working certain shifts, whatever. It's like that can only be sustained for so long and your body wears out. Mm-hmm. You make mistakes. Different things happen. It's like, where is the common sense? Where is the rights of each individual person? It's just insane. Saying that they pick and choose who needs a vaccine, who doesn't, and that you need a vaccine passport to walk around New York City to get into restaurants and different things. I mean, how sad is that? It's like we live in a communist state.
Oh, absolutely. Well, New York's definitely a communist state. Yeah. But here's the question. Here's a moral dilemma for you. Even if the vaccine worked perfectly and did exactly as it says, and it as much as possible, it could never eliminate the transfer of COVID because vaccines are allegedly to boost your immunity. And that, which leads to the second question, if you already have good immunity, why do you need to boost it? That's another case. But even if the vaccine were, you know, safe and effective, as they say, would you still have a right to refuse it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And you have a right under your religious beliefs. And people for, I don't know how long, years have been able to do that for the other vaccines that kids are supposed to have when they go to school. Mm-hmm. And they're allowed it. It's like, why now is it pick and choose which religious belief gets an exemption or not?
Yeah.
But it's just like what's going on with Southwest. What a joke that is. And I know we've been talking about it, but how the mainstream media covered it up.
Well, they, you know, and here's the thing too, and I was thinking about this morning, I was thinking of making a Facebook post. So here's another big question. The mainstream media, do you think they are guilty of, I know they're guilty of withholding, you know, life-saving medical information, and they've suppressed hydroxychloroquine, they've suppressed ivermectin, they've suppressed all kinds of knowledge on early treatments, monoclonal antibodies, vitamin C, D3, zinc, they've suppressed all this information, and they've killed hundreds of thousands of people. So, you know, as much as I believe journalists are independent, and that's fine, but when they willfully know, and I believe they know, that these early treatments would have saved at least 80%+ of the lives that were lost to COVID. And I don't even know what that is, but it could be even more than that. You know, are they guilty of, you know, accessory to mass murder, criminally negligent homicide, or some other crime? And I'm not one for putting journalists on trial because everybody has the right to be wrong and everybody has the right to speculate as long as they say so, you know, and they can do what they want. But I think this is, you know, this is part of, we talk about conspiracies, you know, when three people, you know, get together and decide to rob a bank, that's a conspiracy. All right. They conspire to rob the bank. So anytime you have two or more people agreeing to commit a crime, that's a conspiracy. So the question is, the media, are they guilty of a conspiracy, not a theory, but a conspiracy of either being accessories to mass murder or criminally negligent homicide by withholding this life-saving information, which has killed people, hundreds of thousands, or some other crime that I don't know about because I'm not a lawyer. What do you think?
I definitely believe so. I mean, if you're okay. not telling the truth and just to get your opinion across or whatever, it doesn't matter why you're holding the truth, but if you're withholding the truth, and they are, if anybody brings up alternative ways of helping someone with COVID right away, mm-hmm. it's just like downplayed and they don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if
but even
the jobs, you know,
what they say, though, how they're reporting that, oh, the hospitals are overrun by non-vaccinated patients. Well,
no,
that's not true. The hospitals are not run by non-vaccinated patients. The problem is they don't have the staff, so they're not running at full capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, now, for the journalists that genuinely don't know that they've been fed information and they're basically bad journalists, they just kind of take the information and they publish whatever the bosses say, I don't think they're necessarily criminally negligent because they don't know what they're doing. They are guilty of being bad journalists and they should be fired. So there's different levels here. There's people that consciously withhold the information that know the truth. And of course, Dr. Fascist is the worst example. They got after him at the rally last night too. It was great. Anytime Dr. Fascist's name was mentioned, everybody screamed and yelled and booed and waved flags. And oh yeah, it was great. This is a really supportive crowd, but you got to understand in Pensacola, you've got tons of veterans, tons of active duty military. This is a conservative area. It's a Christian, very Christian area. And so you've got a very sympathetic audience to what was going on last night, but it's just fascinating that, but the way this works is really quite interesting. But journalists, now there's another problem too. The journalists that are under coercion, it's like the pilots that have to get a jab, you know, to keep their jobs. I still haven't researched because I was at the rally last night. I haven't researched the cumulative effect of three factors: sitting too long, getting the jab, and oxygen depletion, all the things that affect airline pilots, and are they being affected worse and faster than most members of society because they have those two other factors involved? If you want to take a look at that today, if you get a chance, that'd be interesting. I'll certainly be working on that myself because I'm curious. But journalists who suck, who just take the bottom line and just go with it. I mean, I don't think they're guilty of a crime, but they're guilty of not doing their job, and they should probably be fired. What do you think? But who's going to do it?
Yeah, yeah, no, I totally agree. I think a journalist, well, it's different. A news journalist, you know, people like on Fox and places like that, you know, they're not, you know, on CNN and those guys, they're more, I don't want to say commentators, they're more fluff, whatever. Some of them like to
they're
think
activists.
That they're journalists. But bottom line is this, it's like the real journalists, they should report the facts as they know it, meaning, okay, they do the research, they talk to people, these are the facts. Tell them to the people, let the people decide. But they're not. They're just, well, I guess, and bottom line is, though, too, if you just listen to Dr. Fauci, your awareness and your awareness and what you think is a fact is totally different than reality. And so then what you have to look at is both sides. And there are, you know, both sides to this coin, even though people want to think that he is the top dog. No, he's not. And I mean, he may think he is, but he's not. And he should, if there is a God, which I believe there is, one day this man is going to have to pay his dues for everything he did to this country over the past year, plus all the people that died because of, I don't want to say his incompetence, because I think he knows exactly what he's doing. But
I think so too.
He has greed, greed of money and greed of power. Because you can't tell me the jab.
Hang on, I got
he's not making
this
money
Fox
off
News
of that.
Site. There we go. Okay. Yeah. The problem with Fox News sites is they start launching into a video and I get this sound blast in my head. So I had to stop that. I'm sorry. Anyway, so back to you. Yeah. I don't know if you could hear that or not.
No.
Okay.
But,
okay, good.
Yeah. The I just think his day of justice is going to come. And even if it's not in this lifetime, you know, after he's gone, he's going to have to account for what he did. But the thing is, it's like, fool you once, shame on you. And you know that quote. And mm-hmm. It's like, okay, people, we need to wake up and see what's going on for what is going on. And you could say, well, that's not true. There's just all these other non-vaccine doctors are wackos. You know what? If you look at some of them and the cure rate for the people they worked with COVID is like so high, virtually no death. And then mm-hmm. You got the hospitals that are following Fauci's mandates. And how you could say, well, people that go to the hospital are already compromised. Well, they could be compromised more than the others. We don't know that, number one. And number two, yeah. If you would do the preventative, it may not have gotten to that point.
Yeah.
And you could say, well, the jab is a preventative. You know what? For some people, it is not. And if you look at, like, I was just reading this last night.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Forget what city mandated the vaccine for police officers. A police officer got the second one, and within a very short period of time, he started to have stroke-like symptoms. Now, they're
like
trying to figure out if he for sure had a stroke, but mm-hmm. He must have had a TIA or something, because if he couldn't feel his feet or toes, and his speech started getting slurred, and normally it doesn't do that, okay, right. We have a problem here. And so it's just really
strokes are caused
sad.
By blood clots. Strokes are caused
right.
by blood clots. And,
right.
And what does the vaccine cause? Blood clots.
Blood
Duh.
Clots, exactly. Yes, I mean, I have a very good friend that had a stroke right after he got COVID. And,
oh, no.
And it's like the bottom line is with that. Did they treat him the way they should have?
Mm-hmm. So you got COVID or you got the COVID RNA shot?
After he got COVID. And that's a result of many people getting actual COVID too, is blood clots stroking out.
Well, it's spike protein. You know, and this is why people are getting blood clots from both the messenger RNA shot and COVID itself, because it's the same thing. They're injecting you with COVID to turn your body into this, as they explained last night, one of the doctors, I think it was, let me get his name here. Yes, I'll be referring to my Facebook. Ryan Cole said that it turns your body into a DNA factory, and what they're churning out is COVID. You know, it teaches your body how to make COVID so that your body will learn to make antibodies against COVID. But the problem is, it also turns off your immune system so to accept the messenger RNA that's foreign in the first place, because it's all designed on a computer. And I still got to find how they take a computer designed code and turn it into a biological code. So I still don't know how that done. How Robert Malone's the inventor of the mRNA shot. We'll find out how that works. But anyway, so it turns your body into this little COVID factory. And so you're making the same COVID spike protein. It's the envelope, as Dr. Mikovits explained to us. The biggest problem is not the virus itself inside the envelope. It's the envelope. The envelope with the spike proteins on it. That is COVID. Everybody's deadly, if not more deadly, than the actual virus inside, which just wants to invade another cell and create another virus. I mean, that's what it is, a parasite, right? So it goes in one cell, and instead of the cell, you know, turning out another cell, it turns out another virus. You know, that's how these things work. And when they have trillions in your body, you know, the virus is really happy. But, of course, if the virus kills you, then the virus dies too. So they don't want to kill you. They just want to kind of weaken you. You know, and that's generally how a virus works. You know, there's a collective intelligence, you know, with them, you know, the way they work. But anyway, what happens is your body goes nuts and they get what's called a cytokine storm. And they were talking about how, you know, your body basically thinks of your body as the invader, because it's messed with your immune system and it's done all these nasty things to it. And so your body starts turning on your body and thinks that all your cells are invading. And it actually, you know, starts, it's like an autoimmune, and that's the problem, self-immune. The immune system turns on itself, and this is where you get the cytokine storm and the, you know, the lung problems and everything else like that. And then you throw remdesivir in the mix, and what they were explaining about that was it causes kidney failure. Well, if you have kidney failure, it means you're not, you know, peeing. And I always hate that expression, but it's true. So your body's filling up with fluid. Well, where does that fluid end up? It ends up in your lungs, because that's where space is, right? So you're basically drowning. You're drowning with remdesivir, with an immune system that can't fight it, because it's consuming itself with its own immune reaction, thinking that your body is COVID. That's
what a horrible way to go. to
yeah, they're drowning.
Pretty yeah,
they're drowning on
yeah.
ventilators. Yeah, and so the ventilators supposed to, yeah, that's what they explain. The ventilators to try and push the water out of your system that your kidneys can't handle because you got remdesivir. Okay, so basically, if you go to the hospital in typical you know fashion, they're going to give you remdesivir. Your body's going to fill with fluid. Your lungs can't breathe. Now, I had experience with this before COVID. Because when I had open heart surgery, they repaired a mitral valve, and that went well. I mean, that was good. But and I started walking around afterwards. I was one of the earliest people ever to like get up and walk around after surgery. And in the 4 or 5 days I was there afterwards, and then you know sent home and started walking on the street. But about two and a half weeks later, all of a sudden I couldn't walk as far. In fact, I couldn't even get around the block. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I called my doctor up. I said, Doc, something is very wrong. I was walking a mile a week ago, you know, and now I can't go anywhere. What's going on? So he says, yeah, you're having problems breathing. You better go to the emergency room. Well, it turned out my whole chest cavity had filled up with 4.5 liters of fluid. I know that because that's how much they drained out, you know, a couple of days later. Yeah, so I understand how you can suffocate and drown in fluid because it almost happened to me. And so whereas the heart surgery went fine, I believe the blood thinners, you know, went crazy and caused my whole chest cavity to fill with fluid. And I almost died. I almost suffocated. You know, I'd say a day or two, I would have been gone. You know, the way this was going and the way this fluid was building up, a couple of days of blood thinners and fluid, and I would have been fine with the heart surgery, but I would have been killed by the blood thinners, I believe. And so I understand how this works because I almost suffocated myself. And it's a horrible feeling. You literally can't breathe. If they put me on a ventilator, I wouldn't be here now. I guarantee you there would be no Action Radio. There would be nothing like we're doing now. So there's definitely some divine intervention. You know, thanks God. Appreciate it. Obviously, I'm not done yet. But that's how this works. In the hospitals, they were doing what they thought they were supposed to do. And unfortunately, you know, they hit upon the right treatment. And I also got very demanding. And they took when they drained my fluid out of my chest the first time, they had stuck this big needle in my back all the way into my chest cavity. Well, that's an experience. You know, but after heart surgery, it's like, oh, yeah, why not? Go for it. You know, I'm a human pincushion anyway. I had tubes out of everywhere and everything else. Anyway, so they take a liter and a half, 1,500 cc's, you know, 1.5 liters of fluid out of my system. Out of my chest cavity. And they said, okay, we're done. I said, is the fluid out? No, we can only take this much per day. You may have to come back? Yeah, come back tomorrow. Okay. So I'm miserable. So I go back the next day, take out another 1.5 liters. And they said, well, we're done. Is all the fluid out? No. I said, keep going. So what do you mean? I said, I'm not coming back. I'm not doing this the third day. You can take it all out now. Took out another 1.5 liters. Now we're at 4.5 liters. Okay. For you guys that know what a 2-liter, bottle of soda is, all right, just imagine 2.5 of those. That's how much fluid they took out of my lungs, all right? It's a staggering amount. And then my lungs started reinflating. Once they got it all out, my body was able to handle the rest of it. There was like a little tiny bit left, and they said, you know what? Your body can take this, and it did. But I'll tell you, there is nothing more painful than a lung inflating. And you want to talk about taking my painkillers? That's the day I took my painkillers, and because I screwed up. And anyway, so I understand this, but imagine if they said, well, you probably have COVID. We're going to get you to put me on a ventilator to try and force the fluid out of my system rather than draining it. I guarantee I would not be here. You know, and it was, well, sorry, you know, medical, well, he just, you know, just wasn't up to, you know, whatever it was. We tried our best, and, you know, so
just
the people
are
dying
in the
hospital. Take the vaccine. Yep, you'll be fine. So, I thank God that I got my surgery before COVID. You know, this is 5 years ago, coming up my 5th year anniversary this month. And so I'm fine. I'm losing weight. I'm in great shape. Things are going great. But, if my chest had filled up with fluid and it had kept filling up, I would have suffocated. If they tried to force me on a ventilator thinking that was the treatment, there's no way that would have worked because they weren't dealing with the cause. They had to get the fluid out, you know, blood and whatever else is in there. It's kind of disgusting. But, you know, you got to be your own doctor. You know, and I insist. I said, look, I'm not coming back. You're taking this out now. Well, we're not supposed to. You're taking out now, you know. And I said, how many times do I have to repeat this? I said, He said, well, you know, we're not supposed. Yes, you are. I'm telling you now. I'm giving you permission. You're taking all the fluid out today. And so, I took. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say. I would say you can't. You should not be your own doctor. You should be your own advocate because there are some things that, as non-medical people, don't know. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know what's best for you. So. Yeah.
Well, I figured if they left a whole bunch of fluid in, my body would just make more. I mean, it didn't make sense to me to do that. So, and they agreed to it. So obviously I wasn't violating, you know, I may have violated the rules, for, you know, but sometimes you got to go there. You know, it made more sense to get it out that day. Yeah, yeah. Well, they agreed. And I'm not going to say which hospital. I don't want to get them in trouble because, you know, obviously I'm fine now. But you do have to – yeah, I agree. I mean, don't be a doctor. In other words, don't try and practice medicine yourself. But if they're already taking fluid out of your chest, you know, what's the logic of – and that's the problem. Why would leaving any in be a good thing?
Right. No, exactly. I agree with you. But the reason I say that is because I've done it too, where I've gone to the doctor and I did my computer search. And they just roll their eyes. You know, the computer search sometimes can be the most scary thing because it doesn't tell you the whole story either. And so, yes. So I would say, yeah, everybody has to advocate for themselves. And if they can't, they need to take someone with them that can. Because, I mean, some people just may not feel comfortable doing that. And so that's why I say take someone with you, but you want someone that's going to look out for your best interest and someone, yeah, because what's the sense of keep going back and keep going back? Let's just do it, get it done, boom.
Yep. And that someone may not always be family. At least
exactly. No,
so,
and that's okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you another funny story another time. But anyway, I want to get on to this next thing. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's ban on any entity from enforcing a COVID-19 vax mandate. And so this is incredible. This came up last night too. Oh yeah. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
Saki.
This is Fox News. What's that? Oh, Saki.
And what Jen Psaki was saying.
What'd
oh my
say?
Gosh. Well, what'd basically that federal laws trump state laws and yet.
No, they don't.
Yeah. It's not going to last. They have no, no basis for doing that, meaning Abbott.
Did anybody ask her when we became a dictatorship? You know, I mean, of course.
Well,
did somebody ask
her why we need to get the vaccine, and yet there's illegals by the hundreds of thousands crossing the borders?
Well, here's another question.
And they don't need the vaccine?
You know, here's another question I've always had. Oh, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But my question, too, is, you know, why isn't these vaccines, the safety and effectiveness coming up as part of the trials? You know, this thing can't stand up in court. Yeah, it can't stand up in court. You know, it's not safe and effective. Well, certainly not safe. And it's worse than not effective. It actually, you know, it doesn't stop the transfer of disease. It may, I don't know if it, you know, I doubt it lessens anybody's symptoms, but I can't speak to that. But we know that people are just, they have the same viral load as people without the vaccine.
Well,
and the question
is,
what's a vaccine for? It's to boost your immunity. Well, if you've already got 99.9% immunity, how much more boosting can you get from a chemical? You can't.
But
it's going to lower it. Go ahead.
The thing is, unfortunately, with COVID, you can't even compare two people because two people, the degree, I don't know how else to explain it, the degree of COVID is so different. I mean, some people get very, very, very sick. You know, some people cognitively get sick and, you know, get so impaired they can't think straight. Some people can't breathe. Other people get very weak, whatever it is. And the thing is with that, it's like you can't compare one person to the other. But what they say, what you just said about the vaccine, but also with the vaccine, people are still dying from COVID. They're trying to brush that under the rug, but they are. People that get COVID and have had the vaccine, some of them are dying as well as non-vaccinated people. And so you can't say, well, the vaccine prevents someone from dying when they get it. And so it's like, I don't understand why get the vaccine when since the vaccine, we've had it, look how high the number of COVID patients has gone. Not how high you could say how high, but look at the number of deaths this year compared to last year. And if we had, we have the jab now. So that many people should not be dying because realistically, Greg, I think they say 20% of the population is not vaccinated. So if 20% of the population is not vaccinated, you can't tell me everyone that dies in the hospital has not been vaccinated. And so I don't understand, how they can push it. And number two, how they can push it without telling the true facts. And also what gets me is last year, and I forget what body entity was supposed to be told and keeping track of the negative results of people getting the jab, they hadn't even been keeping those records. Yeah. And so that should be looked at.
No, they stopped doing it.
Because
the
didn't do what they were told to do or said they would do to help or make it the best interest of the people of this country. And I get why, because they don't want that information out there, because then they would know, people would know, I mean, is that the government is spewing a false narrative. And the powers that be in the medical field that want everybody to get the jab. You know, get the jab and our life is going to go back to normal. It's not going to go back to normal.
This is what we talked about yesterday. This is why it's so critical, I think, for people to understand that we have crossed that line from compliance to resistance, because people realize now, finally, and it's something that we talked about here back in March of 2020, that there was no pandemic, that it's all there's a real virus, but the government response is a total hoax. You know, they're trying to close everything down, get power, close down the beaches, you know, close down the stores, you know, throw masks on people, and then eventually come out with a vaccine. Everything that they did promoted the spread of COVID. There's not a single procedure the government came up with that made things better. Not one.
Right.
So that should tell you what's going on. This was all planned. Go ahead.
What made no sense is you can go to Walmart. Oh, yes, you can go to Walmart. That's okay. You won't get COVID. You can go to the grocery store. You can go to Target. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't go to a mom and pop clothing store or a different store. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because.
Because you could get COVID there.
That's the new normal. They don't want mom and pop stores. They don't want churches. They don't want
Amazon,
you going to
Walmart,
the beach and getting
Target.
Out of the sunshine. Yeah.
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 How sad.
Well, here's the headline. Here's a headline from Natural News, UK hospital data. So the UK has better information than we do. That's the United Kingdom. Great Britain. This is from Natural News. This is part of the stuff I can't put on Facebook. UK hospital data shocks the world. 80% of COVID deaths are among the vaccinated. One more time, just in case you missed that. 80% of COVID deaths in England are among the vaccinated. COVID deaths up 3,000% after vaccine wave. So Senator Johnson had the same thing. He said, look, you know, COVID was dying out, it was going. For the second time, you know, the first time it came back was because of all the lockdowns and mask mandates and, confinement in homes. It was gone. It would have been gone by like July. But once they started kicking in all those mandates, of course, it came back. Right. And then it was dying out again because, you know, herd immunity, we'd gotten over it. And then the vaccine came out. And then, of course, the deaths went up again. So every time the government does something, you know, you want to know what the biggest cause of death is? It's government. Government's killing people.
Right.
And
right.
Here's the weird part. Here's the weird part, though, that these are the experts. So why would you trust an expert, you know, responsible or a collective group of experts who have killed 700,000 people already, and you don't trust experts who have saved thousands upon thousands of thousands of people with very simple, inexpensive drugs? So why is it people are trusting the government experts that are murdering, that are mass murderers, and they're not trusting the doctors that are non-government that are saving people? That is irrational. That makes no sense. That's
right.
Insane.
But you know what's really sad is our leaders in this country, and I'm not talking Biden and them, but the House and Senate, and they're having all these hearings. They can't even, or they don't even use data from this country because we don't have it. They have to, or it's
how about that?
Not. Yeah. So they have to go to other countries to get their data. And so you could say, well, that's a different country. You can't believe their data. I don't think
what,
so.
Israel?
I think if their data shows something, it's probably pretty similar to what we would be seeing in this country if it was truly informed to us or told to us versus the narrative that we're being spewed from, you know, the Dr. Fauci and his pals.
Let me get you a couple of election stories too, because usually Wednesday is election and vaccine report day. We've got Angel Law at 8 o'clock, and we've got David Jones. We probably won't take the whole hour, 7 o'clock, and then I'll play you our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece that they have commissioned me to do either before or after David. I'll sort of figure it as I go. Folks that don't know, I kind of wing this, so it's very fluid. This is a very fluid system here, and so as things go, as they go. Anyway, we haven't had much election news because there hasn't been much election news. So I got this from Gateway Pundit, my go-to source, and this is October 12th from Jim Hoft, who's the editor. He says he's got a quote here from Eric Coomer, who's the former director of security and product strategy for Dominion Voting Systems. Remember Dominion? The ones connected to the internet? The ones that connected remotely to the internet? The ones that changed the votes in key states to make it look like Biden won when he really stole the election? That Eric Coomer. The quote is, only effing idiots voted for Trump. That F-bomb is turning up a whole lot in the news. You know, now it's being directed against President Nobody. But he says, only effing idiots voted for Trump. Well, no bias there. Eric Coomer admits under oath that Dominion executives share his extreme far-left beliefs. So there you go. So the people that are putting voting machines in voting districts across this country, particularly left-wing Democrat Marxist districts, hates Trump, is an ardent communist leftist himself, and probably programmed the voting machines. Okay, well, I can't say that for sure, but let's read on. Eric Coomer is the former director of security and product strategy for Dominion Voting Systems. After the 2020 election debacle, well, I would say treasonous coup, where votes in at least five states had very suspicious results while running Dominion computer systems. Well, there's a trend right there. That should tell you something. Anyway, center-right journalists, I love this, center-right journalists, made common sense observations. This is very key language. You got to understand what he's doing here. Jim is very clever with language. So when he talks about center-right journalists, in other words, he's making conservative journalists mainstream with the term center-right. That's intentional. Okay. Then he says made common sense observations. That's intentional too. That mainstream right journalists are making common sense observations when they say that the results appear rigged. And that's exactly what it says. Okay. I'll give you the exact quote. Center right journalists made common sense observations that the results appeared rigged. So in other words, regular people with common sense obviously understand the election was rigged. Okay. That's intentional language. So that you'll go, oh, I thought the election was rigged, but I thought it was the extremists. No, you're not. You're the norm. Okay, it is normal to think that the election was rigged. That is the normal. The extreme view is that Joe Biden is the most popular person in the world, more so than Obama, more so than Trump. And from his basement, with eight people attending his rallies, he won the presidency. Honestly, nobody can believe that. Even the left doesn't believe it. They just don't care. That's the difference. Going on with the article. One journalist who had infiltrated a conference call filled with Antifa sympathizing callers. Okay, think about that. So Eric Coomer, who says anybody who votes for Trump is an effing idiot, has an Antifa sympathizer, caller call. He said, the article says, remembered that on the call, quote, Eric from Dominion, yeah, we know who that is, was going to ensure that Trump did not win re-election. Where have you heard that before? Remember Strzok and Page? Remember the FBI people? We've got insurance policy. Trump, there's no effing way, once again, that Trump's going to win. Okay. So the coup was in for a long time. Article says the mainstream media has spent a year bullying and suppressing the thousands of eyewitnesses, filled affidavits, investigations, and proceedings meant to uncover the big fraud. Instead, they call all speculation as to what caused sleepy Joe Biden to make a magical 2 a.m. leaps of hundreds of thousands of votes, propelling him to victory, the big lie. Okay? No, the big lie is that he won. That when we all went to sleep, well, some of us, I'm still awake, Trump had won the election by 10 o'clock, clearly. He had the electoral votes. It was done. And then just as if on cue, as if on coordinated effort, all the observers were kicked out of five key states. All right. All the boards were put on the window so nobody could see what happened. Everybody was sent home. And then that's when the ballots came out and from under the desk and the vote fraud and Dominion, Eric Coomer, reprogrammed the system. And they made it look like Joe Biden just barely won by like 10 or 20,000 votes. What a surprise. How did that happen? Yeah, right. He won by the same margin in the same states that he had to win, to make it look like he actually had enough electoral votes to become president. I mean, you can't look at that objectively and not know that it's fraud. Anyway, he says even internal Dominion whistleblowers, courageous people like Michigan's Melissa Caron, have come forward to document the election day's suspicious actions and operations of Dominion. So if you have Dominion voting machines in your state, you might as well just say vote fraud. You must just call them Dominion vote fraud machines. It's like mail-in ballots. There's mail fraud. Because the minute the chain of custody is broken from the person who is casting the ballot, and the ballot's not a vote, there's a difference. A ballot is what you cast. A vote is something that's legal that's recorded. Okay, so ballots don't become votes until they're ensured that they're legal and recorded. Of course, the best way to do that is to put your ballot in a ballot box with no intermediaries, no post office, no drop-off, no nothing like that. Your ballot is put into a ballot box, and then an official election counter counts your ballot, not through a machine, maybe an optical scanner, but ideally they just count it. And it's done at the precinct level, and the votes are tallied and sent in, and then we have election results. Okay, that's how it's supposed to work. Anything else is just an invitation to fraud. So Eric Coomer, Mr. Communist of Dominion, the article says he decided to sue 15 organizations and people for defamation in his home state of Colorado. He claims to have been defamed by center-right journalists. There's that term again. You're going to see that a lot more out of Gateway Pundit, all right? Allegedly saying he was tied to Antifa, which apparently was on the call, and that he helped rig the election against Trump. No, you know what? Coomer is the plaintiff and a variety of center-right media outlets, including the Gateway Pundit and separately Gateway Pundit publisher Jim Hoft, are the defendants. Yeah, he's suing Gateway Pundit, and this should be interesting. Coomer's limited deposition was taken on September 23rd, 2021. That's not that long ago. And the court acted on its own to seal the deposition without a hearing. Isn't that special? They're part of the coup. All right. The court dramatically limited the subject matter and scope of the duration of the deposition compared to the defendant's depositions. See, once again, you know, if you don't want to hear it, it doesn't exist, right? This is how the courts work. It's not that the courts did, you know, overruled Trump. The courts didn't overrule Trump. The courts didn't hear the evidence. That's a big difference, okay? It's all difference in the world. Back to the article. This is odd since no other deposition in the case was similarly sealed by the court. What a surprise. Letting the left write stories about those depositions. And no party had asked for Coomer's deposition to be sealed. Primarily, the deposition verified many of the claims found in this fawning New York Times profile of Coomer. And, of course, you can go to that Gateway Pundit. This article is on my Facebook page, but just look it up. All right? It's like the top article in Gateway Pundit. He's got the Eric Coomer deposition. He's got the Eric Coomer exhibits. He's got the Eric Coomer video, which I'll look at some point. But anyway, that's where we stand on that. So I'm thinking of doing now is playing our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece before David Jones gets here, just to make sure I get that. I got plenty more vaccine stories. I got plenty more election stories. And, of course, we got Angel Law at 8 o'clock. But just I know how these things go. I better play this now. Otherwise, stuff might happen. So back to Gene in a little bit. I'll get you here. I'm going to play Federalist Paper number 6 because tomorrow I'm going to have Anti-Federalist Paper number 6. So this will give you a good basis of comparison. And we'll be back after this presentation. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers, here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. We now leave the tepid and vapid John Jay for someone far better known, yet equally contemptible, for lying to the American people, for bringing up the boogeyman of what might happen as a reason to move from the Articles of Confederation during a time when the states were probably their most united after our war for independence against Great Britain, where there is no such evidence of an actual split of the Confederation of States into the 3 to 4 independent confederacies so described over and over by the Federalists. In other words, it's the same old story. Scare the people away from something good to something worse when that worse benefits you. Ironically, it is under the Constitution that the states broke into the Confederacy in the mid-1800s that led to the Civil War. There is no way to know if such would have happened under the Articles of Confederation. I've searched the internet and cannot find any instance where any one or more groups of states formed their own confederations against the other states or against the new federal government under the Articles of Confederation. Alexander Hamilton, who wrote Federalist No. 6, is far more intellectual and therefore far more persuasive than John Jay. Hamilton unfortunately still uses the same framework of arguing against something that doesn't exist while trying to sell a solution because it might happen, maybe, with that solution being an entirely new constitution where no one knows if or how it would work. Ironically, the Constitution actually ends up allowing for the same abuses of power that it allegedly was created to prevent, and that it causes over time the very problems Hamilton said would not happen if they repealed the Articles of Confederation. In a prescient paragraph, Hamilton, while trying to sell what will not happen, outlines exactly what has happened over time under the Constitution. He begins, "The causes of hostility among nations are innumerable. There are some which have a general and almost constant operation upon the collective bodies of society. Of this description are the love of power or the desire of preeminence and dominion, the jealousy of power, or the desire of equality and safety. There are others which have a more circumscribed, though an equally operative influence within their spheres. Such are the rivalships and competitions of commerce between commercial nations, and there are others, not less numerous than either of the former, which take their origin entirely in private passions, in the attachments, enmities, interests, hopes, and fears of leading individuals in the communities of which they are members. Men of this class, whether the favorites of a king or of a people, have in too many instances abused the confidence they possessed, and assuming the pretext of some public motive, have not scrupled to sacrifice the national tranquility to personal advantage or personal gratification. Much of this should ring true. Dr. Anthony Fauci, whom we affectionately call Dr. Fascist here at Action Radio, is the preeminent example of this personal, pathological power and wealth decadency and obsession. Alexander Hamilton then goes through a bunch of examples of corruption, greed, and despotism in countries that were monarchies or otherwise centrally controlled as relevant and comparable to our unique confederation of states, which were probably the most decentralized of any nation. They weren't relevant comparisons, but he tried to make that argument anyway and made it the basis of his "we better ratify the Constitution or that scenario will happen" argument. But without any prediction of the actual breakdown into those 3 to 4 factions and what those factions might be, it's speculation at best, propaganda at worst. Hamilton also says, "So far is the general sense of mankind from corresponding with the tenets of those who endeavor to lull asleep our apprehensions of discord and hostility between the states in the event of disunion, that it has from long observation of the progress of society become a sort of axiom in politics, that vicinity or nearness of situation constitutes nations' natural enemies. An intelligent writer expresses himself on this subject to this effect." Okay, paragraph break here. He is saying that because the states are next to each other, conflict is only a matter of time. And then he tries to tie his false premise, invalid comparisons, and made-up conclusions all together with an exasperated expression of the futility of human nature. And so it's all going to fall apart anyway. Unless you follow him and the Federalists into the Constitution. He says, finishing the paragraph, "Neighboring nations are naturally enemies of each other unless their common weakness forces them to league into a confederate republic, and their constitution prevents the differences that neighborhood occasions, extinguishing that secret jealousy which disposes all states to aggrandize themselves at the expense of their neighbors. This passage, at the same time, points out the evil and suggests the remedy." Okay, so how does this suggest the remedy exactly? Call me crazy, but it appears the Federalists are arguing for the Constitution without actually using the Constitution in their arguments. No provisions of the Constitution have been gone over. No provisions have been highlighted as examples of how to prevent the very descending into chaos they so fervently argue will happen without the Constitution. I'm guessing the people of this time were as confused as I am today. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from foundingfathersquotes.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. All right, so we're back. We've got live chats open, and so Gene's ready to respond to your comments, questions, insults. Well, we're going to respond to that, but if you want to comment, so feel free. And live chat works internationally, as far as I know. When I get one of my friends calling in from or typing in from someplace, you know, New Zealand, Australia, England, Canada, some of the different places. Belize. I have a friend of mine down in Belize. I'll see if I can get him to type something in. But that's open. So live chat's open. We also have the Skype line, which I'm going to check again real quickly here. And see, yep, not yet. So I've got a guest, hopefully for tomorrow, checking in. We're going to make sure that works. Let me check my email now that I think about it here. So I'm just, don't mind me. I'm just kind of puttering. See if anything's come in. Okay, we're good. All right. So life is fascinating. We're just waiting for David to check in with us here. David Jones of Santa Rosa Volunteers, who was also at the rally last night too. So we'll talk about that. Yeah, but feel free, everybody. You know, live chat. If you don't want to call in, and a lot of people don't, most people never call talk shows. I think it's like, 1% of the people that listen actually call in. And so it's not a big amount. So, I mean, I understand perfectly well if you want to just use the live chat. All right. So let me see. Let's just kind of hold off. Like I said, we got another other reporter calling in just a little bit here. So let's check in with Gene as far as Eric Coomer, you know, communist for Dominion Voting Systems. Any other stories you know of, or anything that just in voting systems in general that you might have heard? Any late updates?
No, I haven't heard anything recently. In fact, it's been that front has been pretty quiet, and it's kind of sad because what is going on with audits in Georgia, in Michigan, and Pennsylvania? Mm-hmm. Did they just decide they weren't going to do them?
They're taking too long. All this is taking too long. Now, there's a lot of delaying efforts by the communist left, because obviously they don't want the audits. You know, they keep saying, well, these aren't working and they're frauds. They're not real audits, yada, yada, yada. But of course, they're doing just, they are real audits, you know, and they are revealing all kinds of things, you know, like Eric Coomer, you know, Dominion voting system. So the voting system, the machines are fraud. They are connected to the internet. There were ballot stuffed, you know, everything that we've been told wasn't true, that we've seen with our own eyes, you know, through video that is true. It's coming out, but it's just taking too long. So there's another article here in Gateway Pundit, which is my go-to election source. Scorched earth time is coming. Arizona State Senator Wendy Rogers wants less letters, more arrests. Well, first of all, Wendy, the word is fewer. Gene, what are we going to do about this? How do we teach people to go back to the word fewer instead of less? Less refers to quantity, you know, like volume, and fewer refers to numbers. So what she really should have said was fewer letters, more arrests. Ah. We're losing the English language.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, and I got David online, so let me just quickly go through this here. Arizona State Senator Wendy Rogers is ready to go to scorched earth on Arizona Attorney General Mark, you know, Brnovich. Well, Arizona's kind of hot anyway. I think most of the earth is already scorched. It may be an appropriate analogy, but I don't know. Gateway Pundit reported that Gene's laughing, that Mark Brnovich sent a letter to Arizona Secretary of State's office to begin his investigation into the fraudulent voter rolls. Okay, and then let me see if we get an update here. On Saturday, State Senator Wendy Rogers told her 208,000 Twitter followers that she is about to go scorched earth if she doesn't see progress from the Arizona Attorney General soon. By progress, she meant a full criminal investigation, including immediate indictments and arrests. Yeah, we're waiting for that too. And so that's the problem, is that, you know, we know the laws are violated. We presented evidence that the laws are violated. And yet the people that are supposed to do something about it, the governors, secretaries of state, and attorney generals, aren't, and the courts. So,
right.
You know, that's the problem. Go ahead.
Exactly. And what are they going to do to prevent the next election fraud? They need to, continue to work on the last election fraud, but they need to do stuff so the Dominion software that, no, not even that. They need to go back to paper pencil ballots.
Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is that they're doing nothing. And the geldings, the GOP geldings, and I'd be curious David's opinion on this too. The GOP geldings, my test for them was California. Were they going to have observers in every post office and treat them like a polling place? Were they going to be up and down the state? Every state organization should have sent, you know, several representatives to California to monitor that election at every point. And they didn't. And so to me, the geldings are going to do exactly what they did in the California recall when they could have managed it because it was one state, albeit a big state. But they're going to do exactly in 2022, and they're probably going to lose, all right, unless they fix 2020 and get their asses moving and actually monitor this election and refuse to leave at 2 in the morning when someone says a pipe burst. Says, well, that's nice. Then you go too. Everybody gets out, and we're going to make sure everybody gets out. You know, but even then, you should never – stop counting until the votes are counted. Anyway, just before I bring David, the last quote here, Senator Rogers is leading the charge for decertification, and she has amassed over 1 million signatures on her nationwide petition to decertify the fraudulent election. And you can sign your name on this Gateway Pundit article. I already have, you know, so feel free. Maricopa County residents are already seeing the same signs of mass mail-in voter fraud that was seen before the 2020 election. What a friggin' surprise. I'm shocked. That's what I am, Gene. Shocked that mail fraud is continuing just like it did in 2020. What can we say? Let me get one more comment from you. I'll bring on David, and then we'll continue with our great discussion from last night. Anything further, Gene?
No, it's just a joke. Our elected officials all need to go. All
that sounds
them.
Good. Well, we have an article, too, on getting rid of public education, all the teachers, too. I actually have Josie here at the – no, that's a different line. I'm sorry. We've got someone else here. Let me check our next caller. We got two calls. Let me get to David first, and then we'll figure what. Let me know who the other person is, and away we go. All right. So, David, wasn't that a hell of a rally last night?
It was. It was absolutely beautiful to see the crowd there. People fired up, excited. The speakers, the doctors, the pharmacists. There were military colonels there. It was an absolutely great event.
Yeah. Did you have the guest that you talked to last night? I'm guessing that's who the other caller is. We'll find out in a minute. Gene's going to talk to him. Talk to them. But I thought it was a different number, but yeah. Okay. Well, we'll know in just a second here. This is the beauty of having a producer now, so I actually get to have this stuff covered. So I'm just going to let you go. Impressions, you know, speeches, what made sense to you? What were you really impressed with? You know, anything else you weren't crazy about? Give me your take on the whole rally last night.
Well, so I was there more for the crowd. The speakers were great. They said exactly what was going on. These are very intelligent people. We had Nobel Prize nominees. They didn't say anything that I haven't already heard or didn't already know about. But for somebody who does less research and spends less time on this than I do, they laid it out in a way that is very understandable. It was very well received by the crowd. There were a couple of trolls there from the other side. I saw. Some,
where were they? I didn't see anybody. Were they shouting things out? Were they just kind of there? I mean, I'm sure that the government, I'm sure there are FBI people there and, you know, taking our pictures and, you know, the usual stuff. And I want to welcome the FBI to the show this morning. If you happen to be joining us, you can call in like everybody else. Anyway, back to you, David. Did you see anybody?
Obviously, those guys are, I have to assume, they're planted in every crowd. I was more referring to, like, just general Democrat citizens. There was, I think, three that I really pointed out. And then when I got on, I went on Democrat Underground. It's a website that they use. They're posting pictures of people's cars in the parking lot, and look at how feeble these people are. But even they saw that crowd. They saw the people. They know what they're up against now, which is great.
So why is this a partisan issue, do you think? And in fact, we got Cindy on the line, too. Cindy, I met last night. And so it's one of, I was hoping she'd call in. So that's Gene's filled me in, which is wonderful. But why is this a party issue? You know, unless it's just for power, because obviously if you take the health aspect, none of the health aspects of this are partisan. You know, COVID isn't a Republican virus or a Democrat virus. You know, granted that the people that are pushing all the controls to Democrats because they want more power. But why would Democrats be so against cures and so against help and so against people and so against working families? This goes against everything that they stand for if they are true Democrats and believe in, you know, what their version of democracy, which, of course, we're not. We're a constitutional republic. But why are they so authoritarian and Marxist in their – well, that's not even a good way to put this. Why are they so against so obvious, you know, cures and treatments? What's in it for the Democrats to kill, you know, several hundred thousand people? I don't get it.
Well, the everyday Democrats, I think, are just brainwashed. They watch way too much TV, and they buy into the narrative that's put out there. Now, the national Democrats, the ones pulling the strings, they truly were overpopulated, and they're doing exactly like Bill Gates said. They're using vaccines and women reproductive health to reduce the world's population.
So why are they bringing in over 100,000 Afghanis and chain migration is going to make that over 1 million, plus all kinds of Haitians and everybody else? And, of course, they're kicking out the Cubans because they don't want them because they're you know, they assimilate and become Americans and good patriots as opposed to the people that come here for all of our welfare. You know, so this idea that the population, you know, I call it abortion for Americans, you know, illegal aliens for everybody else. You know, it's a replacement program. And this is the way I see it.
Yeah, well, they got to destroy the ideals of freedom and individuality. So they bring in people that are more susceptible to that. And you also get a target. There's a lot of patriotic people that they focus entirely on that, and they don't expound energy on things that the government's doing to take their freedoms away. So they're really upset when something happens to a soldier overseas, which is horrific.
Right.
But meanwhile, at home, you're having your rights stripped away, and you don't focus on that. We're worried about something that happens overseas or at the border or this or that. I mean, those things have to be stopped. But
yeah,
for me, it's not more important than your own individual liberties that are being taken away.
Well, we talked about that, too, that the Constitution is not suspended just because, you know, somebody wants to make some kind of public health claim. Let's bring Cindy in the conversation here. So Cindy, I met very briefly last night when she was standing on a box holding a sign up and said, it'd be great to have you on the show. And, of course, David's like, yeah, you know, fortunately, David had already given you the number to call in, which you did. Cindy, let's hear your story. Which groups are you with? What were you trying to accomplish? How did it go? So kind of tell us the rally from your perspective, please. Welcome to Action Radio.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Oh.
Last night, like David said, was amazing, great information, and I so admire the doctors that came out and spoke truth that could really bring them a lot of heat. I think we needed to hear that. So putting that aside, I am a coordinator for an effort. It started as a movement to support Ascension Sacred Heart employees, you know, the mandates that they're going through, losing their jobs, their careers, their livelihood, and it's kind of
now.
Yeah,
don't mention any of their names, by the way, too, because I just want to make sure that we're protecting employees. So I just want—I know you're going to be careful.
Oh,
anyway,
yes,
but I
yes.
I just want to throw that in anyway. If in doubt, you know, and so we'll, yeah. But anyway, go ahead. So continue. I just want to throw that in there. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
That's okay. Am I okay to name businesses?
Yeah, as long as it's, I wouldn't go personal, but if a business has a mandate that they've publicly stated, yeah, that's fair game.
Okay.
Feel free.
So it started as, you know, the community supporting Ascension Sacred Heart employees, pushing back. And as, the federal mandate rolled out, we've now kind of spread our wings to include the private sector. And our goal is to really bring attention to businesses enforcing these un-American mandates for the people that are in the shadows, feeling like they're alone and dealing with this nonsense.
Well, let's name some businesses, and I'm curious what you want to do. What's your remedy, and how might you go about it? So who's you know, is this local? Are you guys national? How big is the group?
It's local. It's a grassroots effort.
Okay.
We started out as probably 20 people. I think now our mailing list is well over 100. And our focus right now is Navy Federal Credit Union as one of the largest employers in our area. They're rolling out policies that are un-American. While they're not forcing their employees to get the shot or be unemployed, they're doing things like raising the insurance for the unvaccinated and subjecting them to weekly testing, when clearly
we
can all agree is harassment, and the science doesn't support testing only unvaccinated employees. It's clearly a discrimination move. And there's several, more than several. There's lots of employees there that are living in the shadows, and we're trying to bring attention to that. And while as a private business, we don't have a whole lot of control, we want to make the public aware and maybe encourage them to do business somewhere else.
Yeah, where did people get the idea? This goes sort of nationwide that you give up your constitutional rights when you take a job, that a company, you know, can take you and pretty much do whatever they want with you during the time that you're there. Now, I'm not talking about people standing on desks and screaming their First Amendment rights, because you can scream your First Amendment rights outside the job. You don't have to do it there. But when they're doing something that affects not only your life in the company, but the rest of your life, and may end your life, you know, particularly those companies that are requiring vaccine mandates for a messenger RNA shot that gives you COVID, perception-wise, what do you think is happening? Do you think we're, you know, and then I get David on this discussion too, but do you think that that's one of the problems, that people actually believe that the government can take your rights away in a pandemic, or that you give up your rights when you go for a corporation? It's okay for them to kind of make these things. Do you think we have a psychological barrier that we need to kind of break through to make it more acceptable to enforce constitutional rights on the job? What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. That does seem to be the narrative on the other side, is that as a private business, they can pretty much do what they want. And I know I hear a lot of Florida being an at-work state or at-will.
Right to work. I think right to work.
Yeah, right to work state. Yeah. Excuse me.
That's okay.
And, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm also not a doctor, but I do know that what's made this country different is the freedoms. And I think somebody brought up a comparison that, yeah, while it might be a private business, that doesn't give an employer the right to sexually harass you or discriminate against you. There are things about America that make us different and make us a civilized and fair community, and things like that are clearly not, and they start to reflect countries that we don't want to be. I don't know the legal side of it, but I just know that common decency is being lost in all of this.
Yeah. So that's something I can help you with, because I don't worry about what I don't know because I'm not a lawyer. I mean, I've written about 100 bills. I've got another 160 waiting to go.
Wow.
And so
you're way ahead of me.
Listen, you're part of the group now. I want to get you on a regular basis. I want to, you know, find out what your group's doing. I got to get the name of it again. You know, feel free to give out contact information. So, yeah, I definitely want to get you more involved in what we do here. And my job, I see it as Action Radio, is to basically empower, you know, this nation and every nation's citizens that are interested in knowing that you can write the laws that you consent to be governed by. It's a totally new philosophy. We are a revolution. You know, and a huge part of that is David Jones, who's here, and of course Gina, our producer, and everybody associated with us. So you kind of stumbled into something really good. So David, how'd you meet this person, and what do you think? Do you want to get into the conversation? And feel free to ask Cindy some questions also. David.
Right. So Cindy and her husband Mike have been instrumental throughout the pandemic. They're really the muscle behind all of these protests that you see locally. Cindy organizes and collects and gathers people and sends out information. She's amazing. We're
going to talk about the other Cindy. Cindy, we got a lot of work to do. I got to talk to you. Not right now. Oh boy. Yeah. This is good. Find David. Nice discovery. This is great. All right. Go ahead. David. I'm sorry.
we met each other shortly after the pandemic started. We all showed up to a Republican executive committee. We happened to sit next to each other. Just look across the table and just know, look, everybody's full. There was a lot of people in that room that were full at that point. Some people complained that night and you never saw them again. The rest of us are out here fighting the fight.
And you've been hiding here all this time? Jeez, David. Sorry.
It's funny you say that, because I'm not a this is out of my comfort zone. But I'm so driven to make a difference.
Okay. Well, practice. Call the show more. Call whenever you feel like it. You know, you don't need an invitation. You know, you're always welcome on the show. The more you do this, the more comfortable you'll be with it. And none of us are professional broadcasters. I don't have a broadcast degree or a communications degree. You know, and yet I play a lawyer on the radio. You know, I also play a broadcaster. You know, I mean, I play an author. You know, I don't have an English degree. I've written a book. You know, I've written you know, dozens of articles. You know, so don't worry about you know. So this whole idea of the comfort zone. The best way to get out of your comfort zone is to get out of your comfort zone. Just keep doing
that's
it.
That's what I'm learning. Yeah.
Yeah, you'll find activism really fun. I do have to bring up one criticism of the rally last night. First of all, that's a gorgeous stadium, Blue Wahoo Stadium. But I paid $4 friggin' for a water. So I couldn't.
And they were offering it free around the corner.
Oh, well, you know what? Since I paid $4 for this piece of plastic and the H2O contained there, and I now have this as a permanent souvenir of my experience in the rally last night. I have a $4 bottle of Blue Wahoo's water that I now know I could have gotten for free. Thank you very much. Sitting here on my desk. It is now going to be a permanent fixture with my Newt Gingrich gavel, that thing, and, of course, other things that I've accumulated along the way. But, yes, here's the other thing, too, Cindy. Activism is fun. We have a blast doing this.
There are a great group of people involved. I'm certainly learning that.
Okay. Well, good. Keep doing what you're doing, and I'll help you become a citizen legislator. And pretty soon we'll have, you know, Cindy's bill on our website, writeyourlaws.com, and that's how it starts. You know, we just
it's funny you say that. We with David, some of our people have addressed city council about this issue and Board of County Commissioners. We seem to reach a dead end in both of those areas. So tomorrow,
funny you should say that.
and there again, I'm new to that side of things. I've never really participated in any of our local meetings or anything, and COVID has changed all of that. I think it started with the election, but tomorrow several of us are meeting with J.R. Williamson's aide to talk about this and see what we can do to get it to Tallahassee and put a stop to it, because our governor did say this is not legal. It just seems that nobody's paying attention.
Well, that's one of the problems. I want to get David in on this too, is the idea that, you know, we have, the governor said, you know, if you ask for a vaccine passport or something like that, there's like a $5,000 fine. Well, how many of those have been issued?
None.
You know, vaccine mandates. Yeah. See, that's a problem. Laws that are unenforced, you know, are meaningless, and that's one of our problems here too.
Well, and that one in particular, so he gets and does this press conference and says that we're going to be issuing $5,000 fines for violating the vaccine passport. That deal, I can't find the executive order. There's nothing that went through the legislators. There's no executive order. They're empty words. And we've had this done to us several times. I mean, Biden just did the same thing. So he says, you know, we're not going to release Medicaid, Medicare money unless you vaccinate your employees. We're going to have OSHA. That whole speech, there's no executive order. There's no muscle, but everybody acts as if it's fact. So especially here locally, at least the immediate action and what we're trying to do is shed light on these people. So if you're a business and you're a CEO and you want to mandate that your employees take this vaccine, we're going to shed light on that. And just like cockroaches, and that's what they are, they're going to run from it. And we're going to continue to shed light on all of these people that are in violation of this. So we can work on the attorneys and the legal aspect and all of that simultaneously, especially getting it to Tallahassee. That's why we need the Army. But we're going to continue to shed light. So these people that don't like it, they don't like their personal addresses put out, they don't like their personal phone number, stop violating the law. That's point blank.
Yeah, I would be very careful with personal involvement, personal numbers, personal addresses, things like that, because, you know, you're doxing the way that the left doxes. Now, what I would like to do, and David, you maybe will help, and Cindy also, is I would rather have like a counter-dox strike force where we have computer hackers that are every bit as good as the hackers that are doxing people, that are showing up at like Tucker Carlson's house and places like that. I would like to, you know, say, well, here are the people doing this. You know, here are the people that have put your address out there. and that kind of thing. So we actually have evidence against them. I just don't like personal, you know, stuff brought to that level, because I don't want to be at that level. I want to deal with the issue, not the person. Unless the person is, you know, like Dr. Fascist, who is openly causing, you know, mass murder. You know, that's a different thing. You know what I'm talking about, Cindy? When I talk about Dr. Fascist?
Yeah.
Okay. I've called him that for months. You know, Dr. Fascist is a genocidal, psychopathic vaccine drug pusher. That's who he is.
And someone who was not elected has an awful lot of power in this country right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's the name of your group again? David, go ahead.
These people who are mandating this vaccine are effectively, whether they know it or not, or they're engaged or not, every time you force somebody to get the vaccine, there's a very high percentage chance that it kills them. That's murder. So normal political arena, I absolutely agree. We need politics and politics, but you are effectively killing people. And we don't like to talk about the efficacy of the vaccine. We want to stay on the freedom aspect of it and the freedom to choose, because we don't want to isolate certain bits of the population. But if you are mandating this vaccine and you are making these decisions for people, you are effectively committing murder if that person dies.
Yeah, and there's something missing from this debate. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I've been calling, you know, Dr. Fascist. That's why I call him that. You know, he like left Mengele behind a long time ago in terms of death count. But what isn't getting out there? These companies are not being challenged to prove that these vaccines actually do anything. You know, in fact, that'd be a great awareness thing, and we know what they do. You know, I've had Judy Mikovits on. In fact, Cindy, go back to our show sometime now that you know who we are here. Just kind of scroll back. You'll get Dr. Mikovits. You'll get Dr. Zelenko. You know, and you go through our bill writing site, writeyourlaws.com. You'll see that Dr. Zelenko and I wrote an FDA overhaul bill. We are so far ahead of anybody else in the country in terms of solutions, because people are still at the complaining level. And what I see my job here, and David's invaluable in this, is getting people from problems to solutions. You know, we did a show yesterday that I think was groundbreaking, you know, from compliance to resistance. You know, the turning point has been reached. And so listen to that show and just kind of get the arguments that we talk about here, because you're going to get an accelerated course in citizen, you know, legislative action, and then you can take it to all the folks that you know. But we want to start thinking of – oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, I'm really glad to meet you. And in fact, like I say, David, you know, excellent work here, bringing Cindy to the show. But the thing is, we need to accelerate the solutions. We need to get people thinking in terms of you know, we are demanding the solutions, we are offering the solutions, we are challenging people on the merits. It's not just, you know, and complaining to government when government is killing people isn't going to get you very far. So if you know, you can't complain to Dr. Fascist and say, we'd really like you to change your plans, because he doesn't care. He's making billions of dollars. It's all going to the Cayman Islands. You know, we know he's got offshore accounts. The thing to do is to audit him. Okay. That's a solution. You know, so at the local level, you know, we need to talk to our county commissioners and city council people and say, if you're going to have a mandate, you better prove this thing works. And where's your evidence? Because if they try and prove it works, and then, of course, they're going to find that it doesn't, and we can present all the other evidence. That opens the door for us to say, well, wait a minute. You know, that's not true. That study was discounted. That Lancet study that, you know, killed people because they gave people an overdose of hydroxychloroquine to prove it doesn't work. That's discounted. Mm-hmm. So we already have the answer. Whatever evidence they're going to present, we've already got the counter, you know, to it. And so that's what makes it lots of fun.
Well, I'm having a hard time getting them to return calls or emails, so I'm open to any suggestions on getting their attention.
Oh, well, listen, we're gonna start meeting because you're local, so that means we can. Well, see, this is something we talked to David about too. So we're kind of dedicated to making Santa Rosa County, Florida, here the freest county in the country, and
awesome.
We're gonna do it by example. Now, here's something that you. Well, thank you. This is something that you probably don't know about that's maybe peripheral to what you want to do, but you may want to join this fight as well, is that David and I wrote a bill to create an illegal alien-free zone here in Santa Rosa County. And it's
heard this.
Okay, well, good. This is why you're here, right? So, David, we're doing good work here. I'm kind of happy. I'm all excited. So what this does And it's all through asset forfeiture. We don't round anybody up. We don't need ICE. You know, we don't need the federal government. We don't even need the state government. We don't need the state police. We don't need anybody except the county sheriffs and Milton City Police to seize the assets of the illegal aliens. That would be their houses, cars, you know, businesses, things like that, and seize the assets of companies that employ illegal aliens. This is a perfectly normal, regular law enforcement procedure, okay? So we're not doing anything with the people. We're just making it impossible for them to live here, okay? So we take the stuff, and we take the stuff of people that – and the nice thing about asset forfeiture for illegal aliens is they don't have any rights because they can't be here. And you can't you can't have rights in a place that you can't be in. That's intellectually impossible, right? And so it's irrational to think that. And when you tell people that, and you can use this argument, they're going to say, well, the Supreme Court has ruled. Oh, really? The Supreme Court? Do they overrule the Constitution? Do they overrule the 14th Amendment? No, they don't. And they only issue opinions, okay? You know, so the opinions they issue are not law. They're not policy. They're not regulation. They're not law. They're opinions. Okay. Meant to sway one branch of government against the other. So if they issue an opinion supporting Congress against the president, they win. Then Congress can say, aha, you know, we win. That's what they do. Okay. I'm very editorializing here. But in the same way, if you, and this is something you might want to introduce to them. I'm trying to meet with the county commissioners. I have, you know, calls and kind of not going to go into details. But in terms of this, this would be a huge thing. And you can tie this into COVID because who's not being checked at the border? Who's not getting the vaccinations
Absolutely.
We know don't work?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. Cindy, what do you think?
I think that's amazing. And certainly if you're getting action, please share how to go about doing that. That's
RightYourLaws.com.
A huge argument.
It's right there on our website.
That's going to be my new favorite site. I've got a lot to learn.
Okay. Send me a friend request on Facebook. I'll fill you with I'll open this whole new world to you. And then you can open
Awesome.
That's how we grow.
No, that is a huge argument to COVID and these employers that if it is such a crisis, why do we have people flooding through our border and no concerns for COVID? But you're going to put an American citizen out of a job. It defies logic and common sense.
Well, this has nothing to do with logic. This has everything to do with power. And that's I would toss the word logic out of your vocabulary, except in terms of analysis. Don't try to use logic for government policy. But we use logic and reason here. I mean, that is my primary tool for Action Radio. Any argument, anything in law has to be put through my personal logic and reason test. And if it doesn't measure up, then there's no reason for it. David, let's bring you back in here. Do you have any news on our illegal alien free zone bill from either groups that you're working with, anybody that you can announce publicly, or what's going on?
Well, like I said last week, I hit kind of a wall with all of our legislation. And I did get a call back from two of the county commissioners this week. And they waffled a little bit, but still, they're stating they're still in support of both our illegal alien free zone bill and using the power that the county holds against the hospital, because the hospital is owned by the citizens, the taxpayers of Santa Rosa County. That's the building and the land, not the itself. But
what's happening with that? Any more updates on that? Okay. And you might want to fill folks in just basically what's going on. Yeah,
we were told that the county was getting a new attorney. They voted on it 2 weeks ago. Supposed to be very conservative. This was going to be good. Get all this stuff pushed through. And then this past week, a few days ago, I was told that attorney wasn't taking the position until December. So they kind of wanted to push me off until December and kind of, frankly, it felt like a stall tactic, which I just countered with, especially with the vaccine mandates. We don't have till December. Every day that we postpone this action is another day that somebody gets tired of testing. And they take the vaccine, means there's another 60% chance that person's going to lose their life or have a serious, serious life-altering side effect to this drug. So we don't have December. So I'm going to keep pushing that and see what we can get done. But they are trying to throw roadblocks up in front of us, but that's not abnormal.
No, and here's the thing too. I mean, you can ask some questions like, well, you know, I mean, do you want illegal aliens here? I mean, we, you know, we're with you. We want to support you. We're on your side. We want to help you help us, you know, by clearing Santa Rosa County. And here's the thing too. I would approach these people with the county commissioners and city council. Anybody you're talking to that's an official, say, look, this is going to be a model for the country. You know, Florida counties are going to pick this up when this hits the news. This is going to be picked up by counties all over the country. They're going to come to you for a model. I said, you guys are going to be pretty well known here very quickly. Let's appeal to their vanity. Politicians love that, especially if they want higher office, which, you know, most of them seem to want to do. You know, it's a growth industry. But I believe it's true, because I remember when the mask mandate came out of the refusal of the mask mandate from the Milton City Council, and then we got the enough good people on the city council that represented the Constitution, they dumped the mask mandate. The mayor wanted it. It wasn't going to happen. City council said no. That made national news. In fact, the mayor, our mayor Heather Lindsay, you know, ran whining and complaining to CNN and made a little speech there, like, that's going to help in this town. That's pretty funny. But she was on the show, and Mayor Lindsay, you're always welcome back on the show, and I, you know, come on back and talk to us. You know, be have you back here. But I believe she was wrong with that mandate. I believe she was wrong when she talked about a chain of command, that she had to follow the CDC guidelines. And I told her so. And so, you know, I'm not the mayor. She was. And so, but it took the city council to overrule that. But it can be done. So as far as national news goes, we start doing things in Santa Rosa County, we can lead by example. We can be the model for the nation. David, you'll know this. Cindy, you might too. I'm not sure. But Kennesaw, Georgia, what are they famous for?
They had a requirement that every household had to have a firearm, and one of the lowest crime rates in the entire country.
Right. Have you ever heard of Kennesaw, Georgia? Have you ever heard of Kennesaw, Georgia before that?
Nope.
See, well, what I'm
getting at? I did, but...
Okay. Well, you might have been there, but most of the country, 99% of the country, had never heard of Kennesaw, Georgia. Yet they do one mandate, which they didn't enforce, by the way. You know, it was more symbolic than anything else. Because Kennesaw, Georgia, they probably all had guns anyway. I don't think that was a problem. But the point is that one law, people still know Kennesaw, Georgia, as the country, the one town in the country that required gun ownership. Okay. And so this is the power of this kind of stuff. So I watch this kind of stuff, and I see that. Now, what if Santa Rosa County gets known as the place where it's impossible for illegal aliens to live? Because we're going to take your stuff. First of all, the word will get out, and illegal aliens won't live here. Where are they going to go? They're going to go to other counties. What's going to happen to those counties? They're going to pass the same ordinance. We don't want them here. You know, let's send them somewhere else. Let's send them to the liberal states. The liberal states aren't going to do that, because they have sanctuary cities and sanctuary counties, all right? So if you're an illegal alien, where's the first place you're going to go? You're going to go to a sanctuary. You're not going to go to an illegal alien-free zone with a big nasty sign when you enter the county, you know, with a picture of illegal aliens crossing the border and a big red circle and a line through it. You're not going to go there, because where's it going to get around? Because they're not stupid. They're criminals, but they're not stupid.
This is exactly what happens. I don't think people quite realize how literal that is. You touched on it with the mayor. So we made national news with the mask mandate. We were one of a handful of cities in the entire country that was able to overturn the mask mandate, and we did it within 48 hours. Yeah. It also happened here in Santa Rosa County with the school board. When we overturned the mask mandate in the school board, we, Ubershire, the chairperson on the school board, had an article wrote up in the Washington Post, you know, calling us all racist, and we just hate her because she's Asian and a bunch of other nonsense. But the fact is every time that happens, it sheds light on the fact that patriots can do this. Everyday people can do this. You don't have to live under these mandates.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is what I say. We can be groundbreaking. We can empower other people. And here's what's fascinating, too. Cindy, I want your opinion on this, too. You don't have to listen to the show yet, but I think you'll find it fascinating. But this idea that I see the trend, that Trump's speech Saturday night in Iowa, which is where all presidential campaigns begin, really, that I think this was the kickoff of his 2024 campaign. He basically laid out everything he's going to do, and people were not shocked when he said there was election fraud. They were not shocked when he said that the Biden is, you know, a total moron. This is the most corrupted, you know, administration. This isn't even an administration. They stole the election. And people were not shocked by that. And there's something that's changed in this country. I mean, stadiums were not saying F you, Biden, you know, a month ago. So something's happened, something that is good for us, and it's good for every advocate in the country, that people are going to be with us. They don't have the tools and the information yet. And this is why it's so fascinating talking to Jeff Childers last night at the end of the rally. I went down and chatted with him, with the other doctor, Ryan Cole. Ryan, what's his name? Hang on.
Cole.
Yeah, it was Ryan Cole. Okay, good. All right, so then, like I said, I suck at names. I'm terrible with them. Anyway, so, you know, and I talked to him, and I talked to Dr. Viglione, who I'm going to hopefully, you know, talk with in a few days and see if we can get some of these folks on the show. But something's changed. Something has changed in this country, and people are ready for the resistance. They understand. They have realized, Dave, I want your opinion on this too, that, and I made this contention yesterday, that people have discovered that there is no amount of compliance that will get us back to normal, that something else has to be done. Because, you know, they went along with the mask mandates for a while. Most people did. Now they don't. They went along with the closures and they stayed home like good people. I didn't. I was as soon as Governor DeSantis, which I called Dictator DeSantis in an article, announced a stay-at-home policy, I went driving with my windows open, screaming country music songs out the window. Okay.
Yeah.
Screw you, Governor. You know, so I was resisting the minute I heard there was a mandate. You know, got to stay at home. So really? Watch this. You know, F you, Governor. I went driving. And I played loud country. And I don't sing country music well. I want you to know that, but it didn't matter. You know, so this is how I react to these things. And if more people had done that, I think, if we had like, or if more businesses, if we'd been able to support the business, we weren't organized then. We are now. But Dave and I are going to be supporting businesses that want to have, you know, these voluntary things and get rid of these mandates. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But let me get you, Cindy, I'm curious what your perceptions with the people you talk to. Do you see the change, the trend that I see? And you can disagree with me too. I mean, I think I set up leading questions sometimes with a predetermined answer. I should probably get around that. But just generally, what do you see in terms of compliance versus resistance? Where what do you see happening?
You know, unfortunately, what I see in, and I'm dealing with the people that are facing the decision to get the shot or lose their job or be subjected to this stuff, they're afraid. And it's like I said from the beginning, nobody wants to be on a losing team. And I think that's what's keeping people in the shadows. They feel like they don't have a chance, that we're up against a giant, and I'm a realist. I see that.
Oh, you got to get over that. I want you to get over that right away. Stop being realistic. Okay. If you're realistic, you'll never accomplish anything great. I want you to be. I want you to think in terms of great. Stop this realistic. No. Just get that out of your head. Go ahead.
I'm working on that. I'm a work in progress for sure.
Oh yeah. Aren't we all? Hey, we're on the cutting edge here. We're making this up as we go. There is no action radio. This is it. This is the only action radio in the world today, the only show with a citizen legislature attached to a radio show. This is it. We make it up as we go. So
I am in the right place.
You are in the right place, absolutely. Anyway, I interrupted. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'm hoping that as these private businesses start rolling out this stuff and people are faced with, okay, doing something they really don't want to do and are fearful of will start coming out of the shadows, that they will see there is a small group of people that are ready for them to stand up and be seen, be heard, because there is power in numbers. There is no doubt about that. But unfortunately, I see a lot of afraid people.
Okay. Interesting. David?
Yeah, so a couple of points there. The businesses, I've kind of contemplated this, and I can understand their knee-jerk reaction to follow government orders. If you look back at the beginning of COVID, the people did not support these businesses. When they shut these businesses down, we weren't organized, like you said. We weren't organized yet. We were normal people, citizens doing our daily routine. And there wasn't 2,000 people out in front of these businesses making sure that the health department and the fire department and these places couldn't come in and shut their business down. So the business owners
feel like they don't have support. They feel like they don't have an option. They feel like – so just like the employees, they feel defeated and overwhelmed and have no choice but to take the vaccine to where they feed their family. So we all have to come together. In large corporations, I don't really see much hope for, but these small businesses – we can talk to them. And really that was me and Greg come up with the mandate free zone signs. And that was the main point of that was to be able to talk to these businesses. You have
to do that.
System.
What are we going around doing that? Talk to me off the air. I want to do that. I want to start talking to these folks.
Yeah,
get those signs
up. A day. We've got to get that done. So we have these ideas and then sometimes we have so many, we don't follow through with the really good ones, but
tell me about it.
The
look at my bills. I got 100 bills. How can I try to sell those? I need a staff of like 50 people.
the other aspect of that was Trump. So if Trump runs in 24, great. We'll support him, do that whole thing. The fear I have with that is what happened last time happening this time, and I was very guilty of it. We supported Trump. Trump gets in office now. Trump's in office. We're good. We're great. I can focus on business and personal, and I don't have to be engaged anymore. You can't put all of that on one man, and you can't spend the next 3 years putting all of your eggs in that basket. We have to do something, and if Trump runs and all these rallies. I talked to too many people that are just going to plant a Trump 24 sign in their yard or wave it from their truck and think they're doing something to help the cause, and it's not. You have to be engaged.
Yeah, one of the most critical people of Trump was me, you know, starting at March, you know, starting with that 15 days to slow the spread, which I screamed. I said, this is not right. I made a video in the middle of it. I said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to lose your rights. And it was very, very, you know, prophetic for what's happened. I got Josie on the line. I want to get to her. We've got about 15 minutes left before we get to Angel Law. We're going to talk a little bit to another problem that gets this is woefully underreported, which is child trafficking, government racketeering in the family court system and things like that. My question, actually, I thought of something. As both of you were talking, I wrote this thing down here in Circlet, alternative jobs program. There we go. And so what I'm wondering is, can Dave and I, we need to talk, Cindy, if you can involve this as well. We need to reach out to small businesses that can offer people jobs who refuse a mask mandate to do something temporarily to keep their families going, keep themselves going. Are there small businesses in our area that's, you know, will hire a nurse, will hire a doctor, will hire a pilot, you know, if they're walking off their job temporarily to keep these folks going? You know, it's not going to be the same pay level, it's not going to be the same job, but, you know, most people can maintain their qualifications, you know, and get their experience back pretty quickly. And so I'm wondering if the large corporations or some of the bigger ones, maybe the law firms around here, you know, do some legal research. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, I literally just thought of this, you know, as we were talking. But if we could set up an alternative jobs program where people could say, I'm not going to accept your mandate, and I'm going to work over here. I'm going to go, you know, maybe even if you have to fling burgers for a while or do a pizza you know, whatever you have to do, work in something that you wouldn't normally do. You know, be a server in a restaurant, but at least you people are working, and it'd be really interesting to see that the people who would take those jobs over the slackers that are still collecting unemployment simply because they don't want to work. You know, I think this might be interesting to pursue if people had an alternative. In other words, to say, okay, I'm not going to take your vaccine mandate because I don't want to kill myself. And by the way, while you're deciding what to do and when you're deciding how to get rid of it, I'm going to go work somewhere else for a while. You know, or they don't even have to say that to the companies. But I mean, if we can make an alternative jobs program, I'll take Cindy and then David, then I'm going to get Josie on the line here. Cindy, what do you think?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Because everywhere you look, there are help wanted signs. There's definitely a need for employees. I know it's hard for somebody with a degree and the schooling behind them to be a nurse or a doctor to transition to the service industry at a restaurant or whatnot. But I think we are in times where sacrifices are going to have to be made temporarily to affect change permanently.
Yeah. But this isn't going to be a permanent change. These people, I think, are going to be hired back. The hospital, the office, they can't survive without these people. They can't survive with 30, 40% loss of employees.
Yeah.
This is not going to last, but this is like a temporary measure. Let me, David, why don't you get a comment, then I'm going to get Josie in the conversation here.
Yeah, I'll start. I'll absolutely start. I could put 100 people to work tomorrow and still need help. So unorthodox. If anybody, you guys have been to my office, not many offices have a pool table and a dartboard, but
it's a great office. I love it.
I'm a little unorthodox, but it's great money. I could put 100 people to work in this county tomorrow. And
Cindy, you hear that?
That's awesome.
All your folks that don't want want to keep their health and not succumb to a mask mandate and are willing to do something else for a while, match them up.
And I can
Action
vouch
radio.
You've got a cool office.
Action radio. let me just play this here. This is what we are. Action radio. Dangerously cool. Josie, welcome to the conversation. Did you have fun last night?
Hey, good morning. Yes,
good morning.
I sure did. I had a good time last night. Yes, it was fun. They were telling it like it is, and they were absolutely correct. And I want to thank this young lady for what she's doing in her group, and thank God for people like her that are coming and stepping up to help the nurses in need at this time. Mm-hmm. I own Ruth Uniform Shops on Olive Road, and I help and pray with a lot of nurses going through so much right now, making the decision about their job. Mm-hmm. But I tell them,
could you employ a few of them?
You're not going to be around. You're not going to be around for your job. So what's the point of you taking the vaccine if you're going to die?
Can you employ a few people in your store? Because I know you mentioned that you're a little short-handed right now.
Sure,
I'm
looking for a couple part-timers, actually.
Okay,
right
how about a couple of people that refuse the vaccine? Would that be a good
definitely.
Quality? There you go. So match them up. This is how it works.
Definitely.
This is Action Radio.
And I also wanted to ask her, have you guys talked about that the vaccine that was approved is not even here yet? It's coming in 2023. So they have deceived the American people and people in the world. These people are criminals, and we have to call them out. So we have to call out the leaders of the hospitals enforcing this law about the vaccine, because the vaccine is not even approved, the one that they're shoving in our arms. It's not here yet.
That is an argument that will be voice tomorrow with J.R. Williamson's aide. We have been deceived, and I imagine the employers know that information and are ignoring it, but it's certainly a valid argument.
Yes.
I like this alternative jobs program. I think this would be fascinating. I think we can do some good. Go ahead, Josie, and then I got Bianca in the line. I want to bring him in the conversation.
I believe there's a military taking action with lawyers because he refuses the vaccine, this officer. We have it in a video that I got. And I've been sending that video to a lot of military because I'm helping a military all the way. He's in Japan right now. He's from Nigeria, from our church here at Olive. And he doesn't want the vaccine. And he already submitted his exemption, and I think they're going to be refusing that. And I keep telling him the vaccine is not even here. How can they mandate for you to get something that is not approved? So he's going to be fighting on that this week. So I've been praying for that young man, and three of them gathered together in his unit, and all the other ones have caved in that they didn't want the vaccine.
Mm.
Yeah. So it breaks my heart.
Just to let you know too, Cindy, Josie does our Latino report. She's our Central South American expert, and so you can get her report Tuesdays at 7:30. Let's bring up Bianchi, and then we got another call. We got 7 calls on the line. This is great. This is a busy day. I love days like this. Bianchi, welcome to the conversation. You're on with Cindy and David and me and Jean and somebody I don't know yet, and whoever else is here. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, Greg. How are you? You and the gang?
We're having a great time.
Someone sent me a story about a U.S. pilot, a commercial pilot dying. I don't know if he died after he took the vax or what. I got to look into a little bit more. And, no, that's a good idea about hiring people, no vaxxers. And I think if you get big enough to the point where you need employees, we might put an ad that's asking for illegal immigrants to come into the country and work at these companies.
No, we've got plenty of lazy Americans that can do the jobs that they say Americans want to do. We're just going to make them. I don't want to do that. I don't think we have to go. We don't have to go that route.
Well, they may not want to. And
I don't care.
Another thing, if I would start doing business with businesses that didn't put the mandate out, didn't follow the mandate and require their workers to, you know, experiment on themselves, and that's for your supplies and anything else. So, you have to fight back. I mean, just fight back. And I still would like to see more done at the school board level. I'd like to see actions where you can recall these school board members and kick their butts out back in the streets where they came from.
Yeah. We're all over the place on topics. We have about 5 minutes left, which is fine. And I actually recognize the number of someone who Gene's talking to right now, too. So another person who started off with one phone call is now becoming a regular, and this is how it happens here. And so panel discussions all over the country, you know, this is the way it goes. Bianchi's somewhere in St. Louis, and our Alita's coming on, and she's somewhere in Texas. And, you know, Josie's here with me in Florida, and David's here, too. And Cindy, you're local, too. So we're all over the place. Let me bring Alita in the conversation.
I'm down in Louisiana today.
Oh, you commuted? Okay, fine. Thanks for letting us know. Yeah, get that shoreline stuff. Alita, welcome back to the show. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to add to our group discussion here?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Well, I was just listening in because I know y'all had that big rally in Florida last night. So
I was amazing.
Wanting to get input on that and what all was said and things like that. And of course, our governor, Greg Abbott, you know, went ahead and passed it to where we're not mandated to take the vaccine, if you know. And so I'm really, really grateful and proud of that. So a lot of people are protected to where they're not going to be forced. Some of them already have been forced. I saw on a comment that a particular employee forced their employees to be vaccinated by a certain date, and some of them were hesitant but went ahead and took it anyway. And so they were upset.
Can you imagine suffering a life-threatening disease? And one of the speakers last night was talking about people within 3 years. You know, he figures that a lot of people are going to be dying within 3 years of this. And this is the thing. It's not an instant thing. I mean, there are people who die immediately. There are people who die within a month or two. There are people who die over the course of a few years. You know, it's a scary thing, but this is a long-term thing. And can you imagine if you made a decision, a short-term decision, because of a short-term income thing, where you thought you had to take this, you know, because you need money coming in, and all of a sudden then you find yourself 3 years later going, oh, Jesus, why did I do that? You know, and the regret and the anger, the personal anger you're going to feel against doing something coerced into doing that you knew was wrong, but you felt you either had to or you were talked into it. Those folks are you want to talk about PTSD? You know, we're going to have a major psychological problems with people, especially if, you know, those poor, unfortunate folks that are dying, something they knew they shouldn't do, but were coerced into doing it. That's going to be huge. That's going to be a problem we're going to have to deal with.
And you know, Greg,
Josie, yep.
It's not just 3 years. There are so many people like my sister. She already have her menstrual back, and she's 75 years old, and she's like she has her period like I don't know how many days, 10 days, I think she was telling me. It is out of control. There are some nurses that have come into my store that they have severe pain in their stomach. So we recommend them for them to take ivermectin right away. And some of the nurses, I had one crying yesterday because she just had the vaccine and now she regrets it. I said, well, don't get the second one. She's not going back for the second one. And some other people, they're like, they didn't have a clue. They didn't have time. There's some workers at Sacred Heart, like this guy. And he's a physician assistant. He said, oh, I haven't had time to watch none of the videos. He said, can you send them to me? So I've been pumping him with so many videos. And he's like clueless. He's in another world. I was like, what?
No, they're watching, but they're not viewing. They're not in taking it. You know, it's like you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, kind of thing. I mean, you can give him information, but you can't make him accept the information. Because, well, here's the thing too. This is one of the especially. I'm glad I have all of you on the show right now. But some of the things that we talk about here, that assumptions are stronger than truth. Okay. And emotions are stronger than reason. Okay. So people are making assumptions. They assume that government experts have their best interests at heart. You can't make that assumption anymore. Okay. You know, and their emotions tell them that they're afraid. You know, the fear overrides their logic. You know, if you look at the information logically, this is a COVID infusion. It's actually giving you COVID. And but the emotions say, if I take the vaccine, I'll be safe. I'll be protected. And none of that is true. So you've got to really start cutting through the assumptions and the emotions if we're ever going to reach these people and let them know what's actually happening here. It's a scary thing. Who wants to go?
Hey, Greg, sorry for interrupting, but I have a dental appointment right now at 8, so God bless you all, and I'll be happy to hire anybody that needs a job. I train them if they don't have experience. I'm looking for a couple people. So
yeah, I bet you nurses and health professionals would make great employees. So, Cindy, you got to take it back to your group.
Yeah, guys. I got to go.
Goodbye to you, Josie. God bless you. Yeah, yeah. Cindy, you want to take it back to your group and call us back?
I would encourage people to join us on the sidewalk this Friday, Citizens for Medical Freedom. You can find us on Telegram. We'll be in front of Navy Federal Headquarters 4 to 6 on Friday.
Okay. Do you have a Facebook page, or is it a private group, or how are you doing
it? We're not currently on Facebook. I have an aversion to Facebook. That might be coming in the near future.
Yeah.
It does. I'm realizing that. It's kind of a necessary evil. But up to this point, we don't. We're newly on Telegram. We have a chat channel or chat group, and then a rally information channel where I post event locations and times. So please look us up, join our movement. We need you on the sidewalk.
Yeah. You might want to do two things. You might want to have a private one for the group where you guys can talk about things that you want to talk about, and have a public one for information for where employers can contact you. Because we need to start this. David, we need to start it. We can talk after the show fairly quickly. Maybe not today, but sometime soon. Or I'll just let you run with it. You know, if you can connect. And if you have 100 jobs available and someone else has, you know, 20 jobs available and Josie has maybe 10 jobs available, you know, whatever it is, if we can start employing these people so they don't have that fear, they're going to be emboldened not to take this. And the way the country's dividing up right now, I've got three groups. You got those that comply, those that are coerced, and those that resist. And so the folks that are complying, they've already got the vaccine. They've already gotten it. They're done. Okay. And they're, I guess, happy with it. I'm not sure until something, you know, goes horribly wrong. The group that I'm most concerned with are the coercive ones. The resisting people are fine. You know, people on both ends of the spectrum, those that got it and they're happy with it, great. Good luck to you. I wish you all the best. I really do. You know, the folks that are resisting, keep resisting. You know, we're not going to bend. Okay. That's right. But it's the group in the middle, the ones that are being coerced. Those are the folks we need to reach. We need to reach them and say, you don't have to do this. And I think the best thing we can do is offer an alternative. So you don't have to do this, and we have a job for you. You know, you don't have to do this, and so you have to flip burgers for you know, 6 weeks while this thing blows over Christmas. You know, you don't have to do this. You know, while your company is going broke, and then again, the hospital's, you know, having all kinds of problems. You don't have to do this, and then if we have an alternative to it, because I believe in action, that's what the show's about. That we can do, we have a major impact on this. All right. Let's get last comments from everybody. I remember Pianca real quickly. Then we've got Angel Law. We're going to talk about another huge underreported problem. You're all welcome to stay. Feel free. But I want to get Angel to document what she's talking about first, and then we'll go. Does anybody want to closing comment for this hour? This has been fabulous. We're going to continue this tomorrow probably. Anybody wants to call back in tomorrow, feel free. David,
yeah, just one last thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
So all of the Cindy's information, the protest, their organization, we try to post all of that on the Arise Facebooks. If you follow the Arise Facebook, you'll see all of their
Arise
protest
Patriots?
Information.
Arise Patriots, right?
On the Arise Patriots, and we usually post a live video on the sidewalk at the ones that we attend, which is. a lot of them, not all of them, but
okay.
we try to do the videos. We put out the information beforehand. So anytime, and if, please, if you're looking for a way to get activated or something to do, there's a lot of those people out there that they have a lot of pent-up energy. They know there's a problem, but they don't really have a direction to aim. Send us
That's
a message. Get a hold of you. We'll get you pointed in the right direction.
How do they reach you, David?
Arise Facebook, Arise Patriots Facebook page. We got SRV1776 at protonmail.com, our email address, and we've got the SRV1776.com website. So all three of those, and you'll get a hold of us, and we'll get you activated and engaged.
Okay. Thank you, sir. So David Jones, Santa Rosa Volunteers. We got Cindy of Cindy. What's your group one more time? I know, right, but that down.
Citizens for Medical Freedom, and it's the number four. Citizens number four Medical Freedom.
Citizens for Medical Freedom. Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot. So like I say, yeah, like I say, you're all welcome to stick around. And let me see what's going on here. I got a bunch of folks here. We'll see who's you know, like I say, we build the show. The show keeps building as we go through it. Let's give Angel a round of applause here. Isn't this fun? Bring her onto the show. Angel, welcome to the show again. I'm glad to have you back here. Do you have any comments on what you've heard so far? I'm not sure exactly if you heard before you called in or anything, but we've got some interesting stuff happening out here. Angel's in California. We are truly national
yeah.
today, so this is great. Yeah, Angel, welcome back to Action Radio.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Greg. It's always a pleasure. And
you
know, I love the way that you have solution-based broadcasting because you have to not only look at what they're doing to us, but
mm-hmm.
then come up with something that, you know, it can truly solve the problem for
mm-hmm.
the citizens. And if we just constantly remain at effect of these tyrants, yeah, there will never be change. And, united, we'll negotiate. You know, divided, we're going to wind up begging. So
yeah.
it is very important what you said, and I find that it is also rather troubling when you split apart those categories because it resonates as you know horribly true that
mm-hmm.
There were those who went along blindly,
mm-hmm.
you know it's like the sheep who went for it, and you know and you can see that if you actually turn on you know the terrible TV that the programming which is the word program is very fitting.
yeah, I never thought about that.
You're
right. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's by no accident. There's a cadence to the tone, to the sound of music. I think most people are pretty familiar with if you take the sound of the human heartbeat and you play it backwards, it terrorizes people. They'll become, nervous, horrified, and it's done in horror films. And they expanded, you know, obviously, you know, a number of things, but, music, the beat, the cadence, the language, linguistics, that they can alter a person's mind to believe certain things.
Okay, you have to do an hour on that. I need you back for an hour just on that. Psychological effects,
oh, yeah.
psychological programming.
Yeah.
Do you have a background in that? I mean, this is new to me. We've never talked about this. Is this something that you've studied? I'm really fascinated right now.
So that actually came. That was taught to me by a very famous woman who used to do corporate training. You know, like she would train Marriott and Genworth. And, you know, very large companies, GE, and part of what they do is programming by way of the language. But a forensic expert in more recent times, I speak with her frequently, and they
get her
can,
on too. We're just going to keep building the show. Let's get her on
fantastic.
As well.
Fantastic! Oh my gosh,
yeah, yeah, okay.
Amazing.
So we have three new guests in one day. This is good. All right, keep going.
yeah.
Love
so she
yeah.
tells. When she has clients, one of her sons studied it, and then she wound up studying it so that she could detect it in persons trying to manipulate her. Because
yeah. I have to interrupt you for a second. Someone's got background noise. We got another phone call in the background. When your line is live, you can mute yourselves. But as long as your line is live, we're going to hear everything in your background. If your cat meows, if your kid screams, you know, if you're on the phone and you don't want us to hear your conversation because it goes out to, you know, Bangladesh, South Korea, Argentina, New Zealand, and wherever else we're broadcasting today. So just watch your background noise, and we'll go from there. All right, back to you. I'm sorry, Angel. Angel, you didn't mute yourself. Who muted themselves? Angel, are you still there?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay,
I am.
Go ahead.
So,
yeah,
yes.
That's okay.
So
yeah, go ahead, continue.
She studied this for the for the necessity of dealing with persons who were trying to manipulate her. And, you know, I think that you have, you know, and then once again, then now let's go back to our lovely tyrannical government here. You know, our police officers are taught to speak a certain way, and detectives, investigators.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, mirroring something that's done in sales, but it's also done in, you know, when people are trying to convince you to do something, even if it's giving up your own rights, right? It's the repeating selective words from a phrase somebody concluded with makes them feel understood. They actually begin to think that you understood everything that they say and even care. And it's very seductive, I suppose you could say. And the human mind, when you're actively engaged in speech, you're forward thinking what you're going to say next. And then when you're actively listening, you're preparing to respond. Well, there are certain terrible people who are opportunistic and they're looking to garner advantage just with simple conversation. So same can be done on TV. And we clearly see this all the time because they'll use key words, you know, and it's kind of funny the way that the big companies like GE or something along those lines will have, you know, TV shows that they begin to populate the topics with things, with a narrative that they want to push, whether
it's kidding. Especially with kids.
You know,
right, we're gonna have kids
sex
in a minute.
Marriage, you know, a trans, you know, topic. And these are things that are, right, I mean, like, you know, I'm all for personal freedoms of, you know, if you want to wear your hair in a rainbow mohawk, you know, go right ahead. It's, you know, federal or state oversight, you know, should not interfere with the landscape of your hair. If you want to, you know, and then not to degrade it, but, you know, people of, you know, whatever their romantic interest is, it's none of the government's business, clearly. But, you know, once again, that programming comes in where, you know, even if we should not like somebody, I have a mixed race family, and I can tell you.
Well, you're California. Everybody's mixed race by now in California. I want to kind of focus back on the kids here. So if we can finish at this point, I want to get to Cindy and Lita back in the conversation here in just a second. I think I know what the problem is, too. I think it's your line. Do you have the show site in the background? Because we're getting an echo off your phone.
Mine?
Are you listening to yourself online? Do you have our broadcast studio online as well? Do you have that up there on your computer?
No, I do not.
Okay, we're just getting a little feedback from you. Okay, that's fine. We'll figure it out.
Do you want my? I can call right back and have Cindy chat for a bit. I'll just call back because I can barely hear the echo of my own voice.
Okay, why don't you do that? Just call us real back real quick,
okay.
And I'll put you right back on. All right. And this isn't the topic I expected, but that's okay. This happens all the time anyway. But while Angel's calling back, Cindy. Any reaction to what you heard so far, the programming in terms of TV and media in this whole campaign to get people to take something that's not a vaccine? You know, it's fascinating.
Well, there's certainly no doubt the influence is there. I mean, you had the vice president just a couple of days ago pushing the narrative that the vaccine is FDA approved. Clearly, that's not true. But if you hear things enough, you begin to believe it. So, when you have your government officials telling you things, especially for those that aren't really involved in the political process, you take them at their word. The repercussions are huge, and they've made a concerted effort to push a narrative that isn't true.
Interesting.
It's a beautiful way of putting it, because at the end of the day, there are so many people who are more kind, gentle, trusting, and they will fall into the trap of believing because, my president said so, and they don't know their rights, and so they can't say, wait a second. I mean, somebody can give their personal opinion from the office of the presidency, but it doesn't comport that they can tell me what to do, or even citizens be angry that creep who he did not actually win, but the CCP elected official Joe Biden, he is not allowed to implement or utter the words of a mandate that he's already violated his office. This isn't I don't like it. It's a crime. It is a crime for what is going on right now. And you cannot, without a legislative power, come up with this. It's tyranny. It's not I feel like it's tyranny. I'm going to use a word to describe this creep. It is a crime. Just like I cannot, or let's say I cannot be at a police station, you come in after being assaulted and I say, I'm not going to take a report because I just don't feel like it. And you have no rights and we're not going to take a report. Get the hell out of here. If that happens, I've committed a crime because I'm acting in the capacity of law enforcement, which is an extension of, your either city, state, and then, but you're in that capacity, you are violating somebody's right to not take a report and do your job. Well, he's violating our rights by going through with this. And, citizens aren't supposed to have to rise up, or pilots aren't supposed to have to, demonstrate this with their union. It's not like they walked off the job unknowingly. They had to craft this huge lawsuit, and you don't think that the airline knew? Get out of here. Get out of here. They have
flies
everywhere.
Yes, only self pilots have bad weather. Everybody else is flying in clear skies. It's fascinating what's going on.
I
want to make one more quick comment on this, and then I want to get on to, and I'll text Cindy, but language is huge around here. And so when I talk about President Nobody, that's what I call him. Or Dr. Fascist, the genocidal psychopathic drug pusher. The more you can say what is accurate, or we need the terms, because the left is fabulous about making up psychological terms that people go along with. Assault weapon. I never say assault weapon. I always say freedom rifle. Why? Because when someone says, what do you need I say, what do you need an assault weapon for? Well, I don't have one. I have a freedom rifle. What do you need that for? Well, my freedom, idiot. So the use of language is critical in how you can persuade people at different points of view. It's like, Cindy, when you're talking to people, it's not a vaccine. It's a messenger RNA shot. It's a spike protein infusion. It's an unapproved, it's a dangerous drug. I've started calling it a dangerous drug. And the government's pushing dangerous drugs. What do you think of that? So you can change the argument by simply changing the words. All right, Angel, before we get too carried away, which we do, what's going on with the kids?
Yes.
What's happening? How do we protect our kids? What's being done to them? Yeah.
Well, the spike protein infusion is also a problem in the courts. I have been dealing with cases recently where kids have been taken away from their parent who is not willing to take the jab. I've seen judges refuse to hold hearings. Now, wait for it. They're on Zoom. So we have judicial officers asking whether or not people have gotten a protein infusion or a spike protein infusion, and when they say no, the judges refuse to hold the hearing.
Wow.
And these judges are on the bench. Why? And this is countrywide. This isn't just California, right? This is going on all over.
Yeah. And here's – here is the issue.
Okay.
Want to know about them? Well, there's very little separation of powers between the branches anymore. But let me tell you why this is such a problem. Mm-hmm. The judges are the most corrupt in all of the land. And it's not by accident, but by design. The cheapest...
Okay. Let's see the design.
The cheapest group you can buy off are the judges.
Oh.
So this really started during Prohibition.
That's
interesting. And what happened was you used to have to, this is fact.
Okay.
They used to have to buy off the cops and the mayor and the this guy and the that guy. Mm-hmm. And then the organized crime was like, guys, we just have to buy off the judges. Because even if they arrest us, we're not going to jail.
Oh, interesting.
And so it went. The judiciary is one giant cartel, organized crime, kickbacks, RICO. There's maybe a few good people who accidentally fall into the position of being a judge, but mm-hmm. the pay is very low and the corruption is very high.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about family court. This is not Angel's first time.
Yeah.
And it's not, we've had Michael Volpe on a bunch of times. We had a couple of other folks who did a regular weekly report. And so anybody who listens to us, we also have the Action Radio Family Law Project. And so this is where people can keep up. We have like 18 groups now within Action Radio. I know this news to Cindy. She's been blown away this morning. It's like, what? You've got all this? I can't believe it. You know, but one of our largest groups is the Family Law Project, and we talk about this kind of stuff of how corrupt these judges are. In fact, I'm still trying to get Michael. Maybe, Angel, I think you might have to help out here. Finish his RICO bill, and finish.
Yeah,
you know, because
we want
the family courts. Go ahead. What you got?
I got a good one for you. Hopefully this week, I will be filing a federal lawsuit. And naming the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are going to do is attempt to have the federal government take over the courts as part of our injunctive relief into a receivership. Because just like that happened in California to our prison system because it was so corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So rife with corruption,
okay.
And the courts prefer to give non-monetary relief up front. Now, we're going to make some corrupt judges spit their tea out when we file this, but it must be done. And amongst other things, I mean, we're still looking for, you know, financial relief, but we're going to be merging into big class actions. I mean, I don't know if you know Ken Rosa, but there's a group he recently shared. He's an active father's rights person, and he
mm-hmm.
shared a lawsuit that is out of the Suffolk County, New York, and it's a class action for fathers deprived of contact with their children
mm-hmm.
For $1
billion.
That's a huge
problem. You know, I've known about this ever since. This is one of the reasons marriage hesitant. I'll make up a new term here. But fathers are treated horribly, in all kinds of ways by courts.
I have to correct you because that's not true.
Not as bad as it was?
Both parents are
treated badly.
They no longer discriminate. Here's the deal.
Oh, so they made it for discrimination against fathers by discriminating against mothers, too, now, so everybody gets screwed over. Great.
Now, watch this. If both parents are treated horribly at the same time, nobody will go into their court and there's no flesh to feed off of. They have to pick one party and then figure out who's going to fight the longest and hardest for their children and how they extract money. So they just give the parent to the inferior. They give the child to the inferior parent. The end.
Yeah, I never understood that until you made that clear. And we've talked about this before. But the whole basis of family court is conflict, and extending the conflict as long as possible so they make the most money. They can employ the most special child psychologists, experts, guardian ad litem. All these other terms that I had no knowledge about. But they do this. So if you want to get divorced, the worst place you can end up is family court. It's like if you want to be protected against COVID, the worst thing you can do is take a vaccine. that allegedly is to prevent COVID. So everything we're being told is a lie. We're through the looking glass here. We're in a very bizarre world where everything is backwards. And so family court isn't family court. It's judicial court. It's family, you know, RICO. It's family court mafia. You know, and so this to me is absolutely fascinating. They will take the worst, most abusive, documented, you know, child abusing parent, violence, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff that these parents are doing. And people have been murdered by these parents. I mean, we've lost kids that have been awarded, you know, to the wrong parent, only so that these corrupt, horrible officials and the entire cabal of family court can make more money by extending the conflicts. And if they lose a few kids along the way, or they end up in child sex trafficking, or they end up in foster care, they don't care. They're as bad as the vaccine drug pushers. There's no difference. They're the same kind of mentality.
Yes.
Angel, how am I doing?
Yes, you're doing. Okay. You have summed it up so beautifully. And really, like, these people, like, when I say the Catholic Church scandal has nothing on family court, because I've got dead bodies frequently.
Mm-hmm. Kids?
So the
mostly?
Children are being raped. Yeah, and then murdered. I mean, like, that's like my every, like, my phone rings with 2 to 4 cases per day.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a few hundred already going. So where do they get in line? How do I fit these people in? All I can do is distribute people to the what I perceive as an appropriate fit in an effort to save them. Like, you know, it's looking for shelter from the storm that they're facing. And we have mm-hmm. judges resigning, retiring. When we catch them altering transcripts to comport to the orders that they want to write, they alter the transcripts. We have it in writing telling court reporters to alter the transcript. Mm-hmm. I have court documents altered, and by altered I mean, I think my most hilarious right now is where this dum-dum judge and his corrupt clerk, what they did was they lied and they said that they did not receive a set of moving papers, meaning a motion, something that is in court, and you ask the judge to do it. So they lie and say that they didn't receive, you know, like lost in the mail. Well, here's the problem nowadays. These creep judges have a problem with we're e-filing. So there's a digital chain proving that it was submitted. Okay, so that creep wants to lie, and we have the digital document that says it was submitted. Not a problem. But then we call the main clerk. Like, there's just like general. Imagine like a mail room, and there are general clerks that stand around, and all they do all day is receive documents. So we email them and say, hey, where are these documents that are supposed to go into that creep's courtroom? And they say, what are you talking about? We got it. And we say, well, the judge is saying they didn't. We'll go walk it down to him ourselves, the paper version. So then they walk it down to themselves. We call the department again. They say, we don't have it. So now, I guess the main clerks who have no skin in the game, they're liars, right? Okay, yeah, sure.
Right.
So on and on this goes, and we're demanding an emergency hearing. A couple weeks pass. Then magically the head clerk finds the document, like it's a piece of paper, but it's not because it was e-filed. Okay, and we have all these emails noticing that they'd received it. Like, mm-hmm. right, you already can hear there's a family court circus going on.
Oh, yeah.
Lo and behold, we receive it back, and these clowns, now that, I don't know why they picked this date, but the document winds up stamped, I'll give you the date, December 19th, 2019. That must be like a special day of corruption for the court, because the problem here is, now everyone keep in mind, December 19th, 2019, the document is stamped, and that's called a conformed on date. You're not supposed to change. It's like a physical stamper that, you know, like the old-fashioned train tickets, they stamp it. You're not supposed to go changing it backwards or forwards, but at the courthouse. So they stamped this document December 19th, 2019. Well, the really difficult part is the events in that motion didn't occur until January 6th, 2020. And I didn't file it until January 7th, 2020.
Yeah, so they're post-dating, pre-dating, they're screwing the dates up to make it moot, or I want to get Cindy in the conversation too, so don't feel that, like, you have to waste Cindy. But what does moving dates do in terms of the legal aspects of this? Then I want to find out more about where the kids are going and how to keep them out of the family court. But how bad is changing the dates? What does that do?
Greg, like, how bad would be changing the dates on an expiration date for your milk or for a medicine?
Yeah.
It's a pretty big frickin' deal.
So I know it is. I just want to know the extent of what they're using it for. I'm really curious to how because I don't know the legal aspects, but how badly can people affect a case by changing certain dates? Does it change everything?
Well, it can change a tremendous number of things, including somebody's right to appeal, somebody's right to be heard, the number of days that transpire. Not only is it stamped wrong, it is in the wrong chronological order in what's called the docket.
Okay.
Meaning that, so, like, you know, you look on, and it, like, they put it in chronological order. It is completely out of chronological order, and nobody corrected it. Because let's just say that somebody fell on top of the stamper, and the dates got jumbled, and then they were, you know, dazed and confused, they got up and they stamped the document incorrectly, and then they realized their error, but felt so stupid and they were still dazed and confused that they go to their supervising clerk and say, "Can you sign this?" Now, mind you, there's a second person, a supervising clerk, and then, Greg, please don't forget the amount of energy and focus around this magically missing document that one person had and the other one didn't, and emails going back and forth. And that's the document that winds up with the wrong date on it, huh?
Okay, now I see how this works.
Yeah,
I was curious about that. So you can prevent an action that someone takes if you move the date up, and their expiration, statute of limitations, whatever, is all of a sudden gone. If you change the date, so you appealed this 2 days after it expired. I'm sorry, we can't take this up, when it could have been perfectly valid because they changed the date. Let me hold you up just for a second. Let's see if Cindy, did you want to get in this conversation at all? Is this all new to you?
No, this is fascinating. It's very new to me.
Okay.
If you want to lose your rights, go to court. If you want to
wait,
feel like
I
you're
I want
to
let that ring. Hold on.
Proceeding,
no.
Go to court.
Stop right there. That's one of those earth-shattering statements. I want to let that kind of resonate in people's brain for a while. If you want to lose your rights, go to court. Now, I want people to think about that. Mm-hmm. Why do you go to court? You go to court to get your rights enforced. So now, so court is like the worst place you can end up when it comes to family issues, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the hospital for health care.
I was just thinking that.
Interesting.
Want to die?
So let's talk
come here.
Yeah. If you want to lose your kids, go to family court. If you want them to end up with the abusive parent, you know, with the abusive boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, go to court. You know, if you want your kids,
it's even worse than that.
Well, let's talk about the.
Greg,
let's talk
throwing people in jail. I've got people getting thrown in jail.
Okay.
A mom raised her hand in court and spoke out of turn. She was thrown in jail for 60 days.
For
father,
contempt, or what was the trumped up charge, as they say? Nothing against Trump.
Contempt.
Okay. What does that mean? Because we hear that all the time. What does contempt of court mean? You just what? What does it mean? Help me out.
By the usual standard, you are disobedient to a court order, but you can, I mean, usually get something like a fine, and an unrepresented person is ignorant of the rules of court, and this person could not possibly serve any time or even a financial fine would be wildly excessive and inappropriate.
And they're going to jail.
Yeah, 60 days.
Okay, so Dr. Fascist is out there killing 700,000 people, and he's living a comfortable life, making billions off vaccines, and you know, mothers and fathers that don't want their kids sent to the abusive parent because they might be injured or killed, they're going to jail for speaking out. we're in a strange world. We're in a very strange place. I want to run a scenario by you because I think I see how this can happen. I want to see if this is what's going on. And I want to find out where the kids are going. Child sex trafficking, foster care. We need to get into that a little bit too. But in terms of if you're a parent, okay, now I can see how the system is psychologically geared against you. So you're a parent. You know the other parent is doing horrible things. You've seen the bruises. You've been to the schools. You know, they've been to the doctors. You know that the other parent, you know, I'm not saying who, because you know, this is an equal opportunity abusive thing, but the other parent is the one you don't want your kid to end up with. The courts are trying to award that, your kid or kids, to this other parent. The psychologist has said the other parent is the better parent. You know, the guardians have said, well, we've watched them. That other parent's the better parent. Everything is stacked against you. Your own lawyer is probably, you know, the judge's, you know, nephew or sister or brother or some of their you know, they all go to country clubs together. They like the same, you know, dirty martini, okay, whatever it is. So there's a connection. All these people are connected. It's like a big club. So they all go to the country club together, and you're there on your own. You're the good parent. You know you're the good parent, and everything is stacked against you. Why wouldn't you scream out in court? I can't imagine the frustration level wouldn't build
out.
Up to
she
the
did,
point.
She just spoke. She didn't scream.
Okay, but even if you speak, it's like, you know you want to say something because everything's happening against you. Nobody's listening. Nobody's understanding what's going on. You've got an abusive parent. You don't want to end up with the kids. That's why you divorced them in the first place. Yeah.
Okay. Greg, that's because we want to accurately describe what's going on.
Okay, feel free. Yeah,
correct me. Now, ready? Let me break your heart. Go ahead. Let me break your heart. They do hear you.
Oh.
They do know what is going on.
Okay.
It's not that the other side's tricked them.
Okay, so what's
they
going on?
They know that they're going to put the child with the abusive parent.
Okay. That's the saddest thing I've heard in a long time.
Well, where's their more money?
Yeah.
Child abuse is big money. A child in a happy, healthy household doesn't need a psychologist, do they?
Nope.
They don't need a doctor.
Two-parent families, you know, most intact two-parent families, you know, kids don't need a psychologist, you know. Religious families, you know, families, extended families, you know, all these things that built this country. Well, let's ask that about that. Is part of this about destroying, you know, families, you know, in other words, making the divorce or even encouraging divorce? I mean, is there any like mediation or things to work out? Or at this point, by the time they get there, these are, you know, divorcing families anyway. But is there a motivation that if they can actually cause or inspire more divorce, there's more business for them?
Well, yeah. I mean, then you have allegiance to the state. And now the other problem that arises is these children when because it re-victimizes a child and the protective parent to take them through court and they receive no relief.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the cops are, for the most part, just as worthless. There's a discrimination in domestic violence that when you go to a cop and you ask for help, that they don't actually help you. So it's everybody doesn't want to work. You know, like you keep hearing that. And these judges, the cops, crime is big business for them.
Yeah.
If people are getting along, they don't have a job. But they can have a job and still not do anything because then it happens again and they get a call, but they don't do anything.
You know, if there's no need for this, you know, rather than perpetuate the corruption, it'd be nice if they had some oversight of these courts and say, you know what? Hey, we don't need you guys as much. You know, we're going to cut back on family court because people are working things out. You know, this just, but it doesn't work that way. There is no oversight. There is, you know, they're self-perpetuating. They're generating their own, you know, leads. They're like salespeople. They're generating their own sales leads. They're working with their own organization.
Right.
It's a racketeering kind of thing. So, yeah, so we got about actually, we do have some time. What's happening to kids in terms of foster care, child sex trafficking? Worst case scenario is where are these kids going? If not the bad parent, where else?
You want to hear one of my stories for this week?
Or
do you want to have two of them?
Well, we got 22 minutes. Go for it.
I got a mom.
You know, tell me what you got.
Yeah, I'll try to take it speedy. And by the way, the answer is try to stipulate outside of court to terms You know, obviously this is not direct legal advice. Each person has to go and figure out what they want to do on their own. But and this is, once again, staying outside of courts, staying away from the illegal system. Come to terms on everything on your own outside. Use your CPA to help you divide up the assets. Judges and attorneys are idiots, and they call in forensic accountants because they don't know how to do math. So just go to your CPA, somebody who is competent, capable, has a brain, and have them help you divide it up. We should maybe employ former FBI auditors who can get to the bottom of what people really make and say, you guys divide it up, because there's no reason for a dumb judicial officer who doesn't care whether you live or die and probably hopes for the latter, that, you know, what could they do for you? They are inept. How is somebody who can't, you know, interpret a cash flow statement or the value of a business, how are they dividing anything? They're idiots. And,
are there divorce
accountants?
Are there accounts that specialize in divorce and asset division? Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, because attorneys and judges are so stupid that they need, quote-unquote, court experts to do that part of the job. Now, here's my position.
Okay.
If you're a family law attorney, what else do you have to do? Why would you need a forensic? You should be an expert in the division of property, but they're not. They're an expert in the creation of conflict.
Yeah.
Family law attorneys, for the most part, are scum. You have 1% that aren't. The rest of them, you know, to hell with them.
Judges about the
that's
same
how
percentage.
Bad it is.
You know, so
oh, but they're worse. A lot of the judges are either failed family law attorneys. Wow.
Okay.
That's
great.
One that somewhat know the code. But then they come from, you know, it's political hacks. So they put them in the family court. The family court is like, you know, it's like, what do you do for a living? And a traffic court judge or a family court judge, you know, I'm a family court judge because it's embarrassing. It's where they'll say that it's where they start them off. You're dividing the contract of a child's life, and that's where people start off. They don't know the codes. They don't know the laws. Maybe they came from the prosecutor's office. Maybe they came, you know, they're just a political hack that the governor put into office because the DNC said this one we can, you know, move up through the judicial system and have divide all of the cases in our favor. Judges are supposed to be elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, they're not. They're appointed by creep show governors, and it's for political favors. Look across their voting cards. Good luck in California getting somebody who isn't put there by the DNC.
So there's no family value believing Christian church going, you know, I mean, obviously this is a rhetorical question, but you're not going to find those judges there. Is there a requirement? I don't know if this, you know, you probably can't speak to the nation, but are there mandated family court situations, or can everybody avoid this if they get a divorce accountant, they actually work with their future ex, and they actually, you know, because people, a lot of times divorces, you know, most of, even my own, most of what we accomplished, we sort of negotiated, you know, it wasn't friendly and amicable, but it was better than going to family court, and we knew that. And so, Is there a time when you have to go to family court, or can most people avoid it?
You can avoid it, but domestic violence. I mean, we have people who are, you know, the sad part is when one spouse wants to steal the money, not tell where it is, do all of these terrible things. Family court's not going
to
help you either.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so you got to go to family court
there,
for that.
There's, you're not going to. I mean, like the relief is far and few between. But, you know, here's what I tell people.
Mm-hmm.
While you're living together, divide it up. And then tell the court, hey, guess what, guys? You have no jurisdiction over our assets. We've already divided it. F you very much. You're not going to profiteer off of us.
Yeah.
And so I tell people, hey, look, at the end of the day, a judge doesn't actually divide the assets. They beat you down, and then they drain all of it, and all the money goes to the attorneys until the two parties are like, fine, I'll take this, and she can have this, and da-da-da-da-da. That's the way it goes down. not like the judge says, and on this day he hath receiveth the Toyota Sienna. And you know, like, it doesn't work that way. It's just round and round and round, and they can do it in their own home. So divide the assets that there's nothing for the court to lay their hands on.
Okay.
And then, you know, I think the courts need to be divided with financial courts and then custody. And here's my position about custody.
Ooh,
so
they
really
have two sets of courts? This is big.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
There's financial court because then there's only math. And then the other one, and we don't commingle. You know, it's not like you can get more money if you have more time. It's just dividing the assets. And then the other one is the parenting time with the child. Now, here's my thing about custody. It's not about mom or dad's rights. Whoever's saying that is a disgusting human being. It's about the child. Do what the child needs. And on top of it, all children are not created equal. In a unified household, Johnny might really love hanging out with dad, and Susie really likes hanging out with mom. I know it sounds inconvenient. Well, tough cookies. You know, two adults decided to split the household. They're the one who is going to have to be inconvenienced and sit around multiple schedules of children. Figure it out, because you ruined a child's, you know, their home. So parents now get stuck with the inconvenience of driving a little bit more than they had planned on. But the whole 1 week on, 1 week off is a barbaric way, and it dehumanizes the child. It says you are so unimportant that you are just an obligation or a scheduling issue for me. 1 week on, 1 week off. Oh, yeah. In a romantic relationship, would any one of us want to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to love you 1 week on, 1 week off? Gross.
Well,
totally screw up the person.
No, that makes total sense.
Unless the kid
wants
it.
Well, it's interesting. I had an idea I want to run by you. That the normal course of events is that they pick the parent they want to award the kid to, and of course that parent needs a place for the kid to live, so that parent gets the house. You know, they get the child support, and the other parent is basically cast away. Usually the good parents we're talking about here. What if, have people tried this where they've ever had the kid and the house are the things that are fixed, or the kids? And the parents move in and out each week, so the parents have their own locked room in the house, and you leave the kids in their home, in their room, in their school, with their friends. Their life doesn't change because, you know, this is about the kids. The kids aren't getting divorced. The parents are. So why should the kids have to shuttle around the whole world? Why can't the parents who are divorcing let them do the shuttling? So you keep the house in both their names until the kids are old enough and they've moved out, which could be 35 these days, but that's another story. We'll talk about it another time. But what I'm saying is, but for up until 18 years old, that the parents will maintain that house. And they go get an apartment, and they go get a little studio, and they move in and out each week. Is that being done? Is that common? Is that recommended? What's going on there?
That's a great solution, and it does exist. But you know what I'll tell you? If it exists outside of the family court, because those people are decent people. And you do have decent people that separate. So family court is not for decent people. Family court only requires one horrible person, and it can be either one of the litigants or it could be either one of their attorneys. So you have four people at a minimum, and if just one of them is a bad apple, that family will be destroyed.
Yeah. See, I was fortunate enough that despite, my marriage problems, which I'm not going to go into, at least my ex was and I were decent enough. We never had to go to family court. We negotiated everything.
That's right.
And it took time, and it took a lot of talking, but we actually avoided it because we both knew that we didn't need to go there. For one thing, it's expensive.
Well, like,
and for another reason,
you don't have to.
You can, you know, even with people that you don't agree with, you can still find, I guess the word is equitable solution. And we did.
And you have to, no matter what, you have to. And so I'm going to tell you that one, because I went down a rabbit hole. But the one of the cases that I have going on this week, mom had 5-year restraining order on Dad. He is a violent person. In very recent time, he found himself in some just general conflict dispute with her. He saw her on a street, and he chased her with her 10 and 12-year-old child while they fled from him. As she was attempting to flee, he got a hold of her ponytail that was trailing down her back, and he began to yank it as they attempted to flee from him. He yanked it to the extent that she had an injury to her neck. Once he finally got a hold of her, he's a hockey player, he punched her in the hip and dropped her to the concrete. The children saw this. An adult child of hers who is not from that marriage saved his mother by pulling this creep off of her. The Gabby Petillo video has nothing on this one. And what do you think the police did?
I'm afraid to ask at this point because this is just horror story after horror story. They sided with the guy. They arrested the woman.
No, so they didn't side with him, but they let him go.
Okay.
They said, I really, really want to arrest him, but we're going to let him go today.
Because?
Why? Why? Because the police officers like to violate their duties to take a violent assaulter, a perpetrator of violence, into custody. She was discriminated against because she used to be married to him. It's discrimination. If that happened to me, and this SOB assaulted me in that manner, they would have thrown him into cuffs and into the back of the car, and we'd be awaiting, the DA. In California, he probably would have been let out in like 15 minutes. Okay. But the whole point is there would be a criminal indictment.
Yeah.
We are men and women and children are discriminated against, and we are not given equal access to law and remedies because we were formerly in an intimate or familial relationship with somebody. So crimes don't count. And now here's the other disgusting one. Here's why I'm telling you family court sucks. What they do is when something like that happens and the inept, corrupt police don't do their job and they say, oh, you guys are already in court, so you go there. Now, hey, dumb cop. There's no criminal code in family court, you see? So the judge has no ability to do anything with this. The judge has no ability to apply the law. They can make a finding of domestic violence. They can issue a DVRO. But, oh, wait, spoiler alert, she already has a 5-year restraining order. So he was in violation of a restraining order. On a daily basis, this creep messages her, approximately 35 times a day is what I'm averaging. There's a restraining order. There are several hundred contempts of that restraining order. And the last time she went into court, the judge said, you know what? I think you're alienating this father. Took the children away from her without an evidentiary hearing.
Right.
And then put her on supervised visits so she could pay $90 per hour to see her own children. She put the children with a found perpetrator of domestic violence with a restraining order who's in violation of it and then made mother pay to see her own children. Oh, but wait, I have something else really important to tell you. She didn't actually have an evidentiary hearing. This was just based upon hearsay of that the father feels alienated by her calling the police after he assaults her. So there's no actual hearing. It was just like they went in, no evidence brought forward, no exhibits, no trial, no due process whatsoever, and she lost a custody of her children. Wait, in comes what's called minors counsel, and this judge appoints a person and says, you now hold privilege over the children's medical, educational records, everything. And this minors counsel is then, wait for it, given legal custody of the children.
Yeah, I hear these horror stories, you know, and this whole idea of alienation. We've talked about it before. I don't want to.
I got one more for you.
I want to find out about foster care. And I want to find out about the kids, about where they're ending up.
Then I have the perfect transitional statement.
Go for
it, Greg. The Miners Council says I'd like to put them in foster care.
Okay.
Mm,
so instead of going back to
the good parent,
and if they don't go to the bad parent, they go to Tell me about the whole foster care connection, because there's gobs of money in that as well, right?
Precisely, gobs. Okay. Title 4D funding, and it's basically Social Security Administration. Because they're just printing. The printing press is just running real hot, and so what they do is, when a child is taken into custody, that state's care, the numbers are blinding sums. And what I'm talking about is the entry point is close to $7,000 a month that the state is going to get from federal funds for this. Now, in the family court, yeah.
Wait, the state gets $7,000? How much do the foster parents get?
Like $750 or $800, like just a
pittance. Wait a minute. So where's the money going?
Well, to the state.
Where in the state? Is there an account? Is it the foster parents account? Does it go into the general fund? Does it go to particular, government officials? I'm not accusing. I'm angry at what's happening, not because I'm angry, but where's the money going? If the federal government issues $7,000, right? Or is it $7,400? You said how much was it?
It's about $6,600 for the. That's the entry line, but that's nothing because you get $10,000 per kid easy when they start stacking reasons like the child has behavioral issues, the child has sleep issues, the child needs a psychologist, the child needs a therapist, the child needs an ABA person, the child needs a minors counsel or guardian ad litem, the child needs.
And everything of those needs involves a person and money.
That's right.
Okay, got it. Foster care.
It's big.
And then
plus judges, plus bailiffs, plus...
Right.
See how expensive a kid can get?
Well, no. I mean, I can see why people are holding off having kids because, especially with divorce as prevalent as it is, and I thought of that too. Why do I want to risk?
Have them on a
farm,
no birth certificate. Don't involve the government.
Say that again? Say it one more time.
Said have them on a farm, no birth certificate, don't involve the government.
they'd be undocumented at that point. That's a whole other issue.
They still get lost. Then they're going to college for free. Throw them across the border.
So
right,
wouldn't it be fascinating?
Run back over.
So what you're actually saying is it's more beneficial in this country to be undocumented than to be an American, because Americans are treated like crap and illegal aliens are given everything. That's the second saddest thing I've heard today. Have I got that about right?
Yeah, you got that about right. But I also think that they're planning on collecting all of the children that are flowing in, and it's already happening. I think they're letting all these children come in. Then they they seize custody of them.
So how does that work?
We're
talking about illegal aliens crossing the border. The kids are coming in. They're on military bases. Catholic Charities is busing them around the country into every neighborhood. And the government's doing what?
Catholic Charities, aren't they so charitable?
We're going to
talk
about that too.
Actually,
I already have, but I want to talk to you about that a separate time because I want to investigate some of these places: Lutheran Charities, Episcopalian, Baptist. It's not just Catholic; they're probably the worst. But there's a lot of there's like
a
$1.2 billion industry.
On the sex trafficking.
Say that again.
The churches are. I mean, like all of the churches have some flavor of child sex trafficking.
Wow.
And like. People don't even know what the words mean. Now, like a church is no different than any other cross-section of the population. They have a lot of perverts in there. Hello, wake up.
Yeah.
Just a cross-section of the population.
Well, Catholic churches are known for that, but the other ones, let's walk through a scenario. So illegal aliens cross the border, which they shouldn't do. So, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy if you're sneaking into my country illegally. In fact, we got a bill to create an illegal alien-free zone here. So you're walking in the country, but still, I don't want the kids to be victimized. Mm-hmm. Kids being victimized by their parents for being brought here illegally. But they think they're going to get, quote, a better life. Well, I mean, bank robbers want a better life, too. That's no excuse. So the kids come into the country. Are they separated? Are they co-opted? I mean, Josie, who's been on before, talks about kids being vaccinated, but the parents not. Yeah.
If they're not separated at the border, it's just a short distance before they'll be put in some sort of transitional housing. And then, like, well, wait a minute. Your kid has cavities. And the person's like, yeah, because I'm from some really poor village and we don't have dental care. Oh, yeah. Well, that's neglect. Give me your kid.
Oh,
wait a minute.
That's how that works.
Yeah, it's set up. They don't care. It's just new. It's fresh meat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't think that those kids would be classified under neglect?
Say that again. Sorry.
The people that are running up, you know, what kind of a parent is taking their child through a desert that the child could perish? Sounds neglectful. Sounds abusive, doesn't it?
Well, wait a minute. Because
many other.
The illegal government, you know, President Nobody and the coup are encouraging people. Mm-hmm. They've opened the border. They've taken down the border wall. You know, they're calling people asylum seekers or refugees when they're neither. They're walking in by probably a million people this year, and then they're taking so they're coerced into bringing their kids here, right? And then those kids are then separated from the parents. I'm surprised that hasn't made.
Yeah. Oh yeah, okay. Well, so it has made the news, but they're suppressing it. Like there are children who are brought up with family members, so that they can gain passage, and then once they get here, those family members are often selling the children, for sex. Like the way that it works is like, just so everybody gets it, because like the word child sex trafficking, when people say human trafficking, people think about like human bodies just kind of moving about the country. No, that's not what it looks like. What it looks like is an 8-year-old little girl will be brought somewhere like Anaheim, California, Orlando, Florida, because they are hubs for where children are. And so men can go into hotel rooms with those children. Those are major international airports. And when the child is screaming and crying and in a hotel room with what appears to be a businessman, they think, oh, the kid had a really long day at Disney. The child's being sold and raped. Now, the child isn't just sold and raped one time. The child is sold and raped multiple times in one day, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8. Each encounter with the child is a value of $500 to $1,000. So a kid is generating between $4,000 to $8,000 a day.
Yeah, I hate to do this. I have to hold you up. We're literally out of time. We're about 5 seconds left. So what I want to do is come back next week or the week after, sometime really soon, and let's continue this. But I want to focus specifically on the kids of what's going on with this, of the illegal alien kids, the kids that are separated from the parents. And we're not going to deal with family court. We're going to deal with everything else that's going on. What child sex trafficking really is. What are these horror stories and what's happening to kids that are going on now that people have no idea about? We'll talk off the air about that. But does that sound like you want to come back and continue the story?
That sounds great. I love it because it's really the web. It's a giant web, and if I press it in one point, it's reacting in another.
Yep.
And I love being on with you, and I love the activist minds of your listeners to say, hey, family, like, you know, somebody that knows, hey, somebody's going through a divorce, and you say, hey, I heard something, and that place is really dangerous. See what you can do outside of it, and then – you know, the echo of us doing the right thing and somebody saving, innocent families' lives. And then we defund the courts by no fresh meat. We defund the schools of our children by
homeschooling. We're going to talk about that too.
We get rid of bad things by defunding.
We have to hold you up. If you can come back next week, we'll talk off the air. But if you can do that, let's do that.
Love it.
And then we'll continue with the kids. All right, so I'll put you down for next week. Angel Law, thank you so much. We've been out of time for a minute, so I have to go. Greg Pengles for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Angel, we'll talk next week, and all my other wonderful guests and callers today. This is another incredible show. Back tomorrow, 6 o'clock in the morning, Central Time.